kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I should just stream the cat the whole time. Like, no one cares about my stupid show logo. No one cares about the chat. Let's fix
your
this.
Words and thoughts.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me today is CJ. CJ, how you doing? Helpful?
Yeah, just a verbal expression of how I'm doing is a noise. I'm just like, eh. I'm bored. With other stuff. I don't like gaming anymore.
Yeah, good thing that you're on a gaming podcast.
Yeah, well, I do this every little while. Last year, I took a 3-month break from video games. Christ. I don't know. I do it too much, and then I get tired of it. And I had to relax for a little
while. Fucking moderation, dude. You're always going on about, I achievement hoard this game. I played it, you know, I had to get my 1,000. I wouldn't play anything else until I got my 1,000. I have to get the 1,000. I need the 1,000.
Yeah, I mean,
fucking, you burn yourself out. Just
but I don't do it like
games.
That. Well, it's hard to enjoy games.
No, it isn't. That's the point of games, is to enjoy them.
Not very many games are all that enjoyable, though. Like, games are enjoyable, sure, but they're only enjoyable because there's a goal to them. That's like saying that you don't want to finish the campaign in the game. It's like, no, the whole point is the goal. It's getting to that goal.
I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Like I said before, although it hasn't been on the show, but like in Twitter, it's like before Xbox and I started achievement hunting, I finished maybe 4 of my 100 PlayStation 2 games.
I mean, you don't have to finish a game to have enjoyed it and had fun with it.
Yeah, but I
have fun
so
with a bunch of games.
Minutes. I would like to finish games and know what the story to them. I never even finished like GTA Vice City.
Eh, I wasn't a Vice City fan. I liked 3 more than Vice City.
Oh, Vice City is my probably like 2nd or 3rd favorite. Like, I really liked Vice City, but I didn't finish it. The only GTA I finished is 5.
I've never finished any GTAs at all. None.
5 is the shortest and probably the only reason I finished it.
I beat Red Dead.
Yeah, I couldn't care for Red Dead. I played like maybe an hour and I was bored.
Wow.
I didn't like it.
I fucking loved Red Dead so much.
Yeah, everybody did but me. It's pretty much the way that game goes.
You're weird. Anyway, we have a crazy, crazy show lined up for you. Later on in the episode, Clayton Kozlarik, I think I said it right, of Beep Games is going to be on. He is the creator of Voodoo Vince. How fucking cool is that?
That is pretty sick.
The creator of Voodoo Vince is going to be on our show. Like, I'm thrilled about this one. I can't wait.
Yeah.
But before then, we have our usual shenanigans and news and reviews and other fun stuff to take care of. So what do you want to start with? Do you want to start with news or do you want to dive right into the giveaway stuff?
Well, don't we always start with news?
But maybe because you're getting bored with gaming, maybe if we shake things up a bit.
I don't think shaking up the podcast is going to make me want to play video games anymore. But, I mean, whatever. Roll the way you want to.
Well, I guess we'll start off with the news then. I think some of the big news of the week is that Nintendo, it came out that they have sold 906,000 Switch systems in the U.S. with over 2 million
wow.
worldwide. So
wow, that's pretty damn quick.
906,000. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch sold 925,000 units.
So almost half of the people that own it.
This is in the U.S.
Oh, okay. So
that means
more people actually own the game for the Switch than people own the Switch.
Breath of the Wild has greater than 100% attach rate for the Switch.
No, I assume there's a lot of people that just bought the game because they plan on having the Switch later.
You have to wonder how many people did that, and then how many people got, like, the collector's edition or something, and then a regular copy of the game as well.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't understand why people would buy it without owning the console, but then again, I owned a few 360 games before I got my 360, so.
I owned Final Fantasy VII before I had a PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean, well, sometimes that's just how it happens, though. Like, it's a good way to convince yourself to buy the system if you have the game already.
True.
It's like, I can't play this until I have it, and I've already spent the money on the game, so I may as well.
Then again, I guess technically I owned a PlayStation, and then it was taken away from me. Weird story. Apparently, the kid I bought it off of stole it.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was a stolen system. Like, he apparently used to, like, go to Walmart and just, like, put shit in bags and leave.
Wow.
And I got a PlayStation off of him, and apparently my brother found out about this. And the one night, I told him I wanted to go to bed, and he got pissed off. He, like, chucked a game case at the wall. The disc inside shattered. And then he told my mom that it was a stolen system and they took it away from me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I thought the story was going to go along the lines of he decided to take it back.
No.
Tell them.
No.
It's like, that's shitty, though.
Parents took it from me, even though I paid my own money for it, like my allowance. I paid. Yeah.
And you didn't know at the time that you bought it.
No.
Yeah, that's shitty.
So,
but
that sucked. Yeah.
I mean, the police would have did the same thing, though, had it been a bigger crime. I mean, yeah. They would take it. You'd still lose your money. So,
true. But yeah,
just preparing you for life.
925,000 sales for Breath of the Wild. And another 460,000 copies on the Wii U.
I'm surprised that many people owned it on the Wii U.
It is officially the fastest-selling Nintendo launch title of all time, the fastest-selling game of all time, and the Switch had the best opening ever for a Nintendo console.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I mean, they did really well with the planning of that one.
Yeah.
I'll give them that. They didn't give it any time to burn out the excitement. Like, they announced it pretty much immediately before releasing.
Yeah. And then you have their stupid moves of them canceling the NES Mini.
And now there's rumors of an SNES Mini.
Yeah, that was next on the list. Eurogamer is reporting the shocking news that sources close to Nintendo are saying that they are planning to release an SNES Classic. My mind is blown. Let's hope they actually make more than a dozen of these things.
Yeah, and then not take it away only a few months later.
I'm going to have to get one of those if it's real.
Yeah, I'm annoyed about the NES Mini, but at the same time, I was never actually going to play it. I would just own it.
I got mine. I'm happy. Got mine. I got an HDMI splitter for my computer monitor, hooked it up. So, I'm happy. Nice. I got to wonder, what games are they going to
play? So now are you going to sell it for $5,000?
No, I actually want it to have it.
Yeah, there's so many people on eBay selling it for such a ridiculous price. When what?
It was like $60. It's fucking crazy.
It's stupid how much people are willing to pay for it, too.
Yeah, it is crazy. This is somewhat Nintendo-ish related. After the success of Mario Maker, apparently Namco Bandai Namco, filed a trademark for Pac-Man Maker.
Huh. I mean, I don't think that would be as entertaining as Mario Maker, but sure.
Yeah, it could be fun. You never know. People creating their own Pac-Man courses, and you know, if it's more along the lines of like the championship edition of Pac-Man, because that shit was awesome.
It could be interesting. I don't know how much you could really do with Pac-Man. but sure.
They've been taking some crazy risks with it lately, with the Championship Edition or Champion Edition, whatever it is, and then that Pac-Man 256.
I haven't actually played 256, so I don't really...
256 is Pac-Man mixed with, like, an auto runner.
Yeah, that sounds weird.
It's really cool. It works really well.
Now they should do a Pac-Man Snake. Every time you eat one of those things, your body gets slightly longer.
Oh, God. There's nothing but those, but pellets.
Exactly.
That would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Let's see. Sony is shutting down the servers for a handful of games on July 1st, including a handful of PS3 Move titles, which probably won't be missed much. Sports Champions, Sports Champions 2, and Medieval Moves, Deadman's Quest.
I've never even heard of that one.
They're also killing the servers for Mod Nation Racers Road Trip on the Vita, which is a bummer. That was a pretty good launch title. High Velocity Bowling on the PS3, which apparently there's a decent number of people who are pissed about that one, because apparently they still use them for, like, leagues and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know that that was a thing either.
Yeah. And then most shocking, I think, is the game Kill Strain on the PS4, which came out in July. So it's not even a year old, and they're killing it.
Wow, that's game must have done really poorly.
Everybody has to shitty, make though. MOBAs, so.
Yeah, that's true. Know.
I don't know. Whatever. I never played it, so I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what the fuck it really is. I just know that it's there.
And then some other crazy-ish PlayStation news, along with Steam, is GameStop had a fuck-up recently. Well, not GameStop directly, but GameStop, I'm sure people know that they'll give away, like, free games to employees every now and then, especially the Game Trust games, like the shit that GameStop is publishing.
Yep.
And Deformers, which released this week, showed up on, probably Reddit, 4chan, everywhere, that there was a website you can go to and you just put in your power-up reward information, your email and your phone number, and you enter in a code. And I don't want to say on air just because, you know, that's kind of dickish. And then you can get a free copy of the game for either Steam or PS4.
Yeah, that seems ridiculous, honestly.
So, an employee-only thing, all it takes is one person to leak that out, and then everybody gets it.
I'm surprised that they don't have anything, like, saying, like, when you put in your power-up reward stuff, that it's like, you're not an employee. No. It's just like, just have it.
You'd think they would have them put in their employee badge number or something.
Yeah, something proving that they're actually an employee and not just... I think that'll teach GameStop for the future. Well, they're losing a lot of money here, so... And you know the one thing GameStop cares about the most is money. So it is possible that they'll fix it.
I'm kind of wondering if GameStop has any faith in the game or not. For pro members, it's 50% off.
Holy shit, really?
For launch, it is 50% off.
I didn't know that. I actually want to buy it.
I got the collector's edition today because power-up members could get it a day early for $20.
Shit, dude. Yeah. I actually want it. I want the game. Maybe I should pick that up.
Yeah, or 15 for just the standard game. I believe it's physical only. I don't think they're doing it for the digital copies or not, but still.
Yeah.
Half off on launch for pro members. And then I think for everyone else, it's still 30% off.
I think the big thing is they're treating it like they would another indie game. So it's like, and a lot of these indie games have, some of them have really big launch discounts. Like Verdun was like 55% off.
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if they're going to give up on the whole Game Trust thing, because Song of the Deep, like, we enjoyed it, but a lot of people out there didn't think it was that great. And they're clearancing shit out like crazy. Like, I got... they were selling a statue that was like a $60 statue or something, and I got it for $7.
Well, it's possible that GameStop, while not saying it aloud, is going under. are not doing well now.
Oh, we know they're not doing well. But
I mean, but
that was the first Game Trust game that had, you know, you could get the game for $10 now. You could get the collector edition if you could find it for like 12 or 15, something like. They have watches for $15, or not even 15. I think they're $5 now. They used to be like $50 watches. They're $5.
Well, to give them credit, the game was only $15 at launch anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like it was a hugely expensive game.
True. But I don't know. And then Has-Been Heroes, again, another one that we enjoyed, but critically, you know, the critics are not a fan of that game.
Yeah, well.
And I don't know. Deformers got delayed, what, 3 times? It's finally out with a 50% launch discount. I don't know. And then
maybe it's just a way to push sales, though. If people see it's 50% off at launch, more people are going to be willing to give it a chance.
Maybe. To get a community going, since it is an online-only game.
Yeah, so having people is important. So 50% off, all of those people looking for a bargain are going to be more willing to pick it up at this price.
True.
And then, hell, you might be able to trade it in for a similar price once it's done being on sale.
I don't know if they'd give you that much.
No, but I could see maybe like $10.
Maybe.
So it's still like, hey, you're only losing $5. It's still a pretty good trade-off.
True.
If you want to play it for a little while and then give it back.
True. And then the other GameStop thing, they teamed up with IndieBox to do like 10 steelbook indie games for PC, where you would get the game in a steelbook with a soundtrack disc and like a nice-sized print manual. And those were all $20. All 10 of them are on clearance for $10 right now. And there's good shit there, too. Like, Thomas Was Alone, Rogue Legacy is in there, Guacamelee, Jotun. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It seems like their Game Trust chances aren't really paying off for them, but who knows?
No, I think they think that they thought they would do a little bit better.
Maybe.
Because it's GameStop, you know, people are willing to trust them, but it doesn't seem to be going that way.
Anyway, last bit of news I have is a nice handful of backward compatibility additions on the Xbox One today. Nothing on Tuesday, but today. They're all like arcade titles, but it's a pretty decent lineup. Gin Rummy, which, yay, card game, $5. Robo Blitz, which I'm not too familiar with that one, but yay, $5. Contra. Yeah. It's not the NES Contra, but, you know, the arcade Contra. It's still decent. $5, whatever. And then, for the golf lovers out there, Golf Tee Up and 3D Ultra Mini Golf.
And you better believe I'm buying 3D Ultra Mini Golf.
They're both good. So, yeah. 5 editions. So, decent week.
Yeah, all indie games, or not indie games, but arcade games.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that you didn't have one more bit of news.
What's
considering
that?
You've always announced it, The Walking Dead Season 3 has another, or has been dated, like episode 4.
For next week. I don't know. Do I mention the
release? You did last time.
I don't know. I know we'll have Eternal on to review it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, at the very least, I won't be listening to that one. I'll have my headset off.
Oh, Eternal's going to be a busy woman for us. She's picking up a handful of stuff for us. Including, I'm sure no one else would have wanted to touch this. Like, I'm too much of a bitch to tackle it. But she's going to be covering Outlast 2 for us. So that'll be exciting.
Oh, that's actually fun. I mean, like,
Eternal
Outlast
in chat. Some bitch will be doing that review.
Outlast is probably going to be one of the scariest ones, but it's also one of the ones that's like, I don't know, the better ones.
I'd probably piss myself if I tried reviewing it.
I know I sat through the entire first one.
Wow.
But yeah.
I should have made Chris do it.
Yeah, comeback reviews.
Hey, Chris, you want to review Outlast? Fuck you! Get the fuck out!
He would just shout. You would hear a small shouting from like way behind the mic, just like, it's deny it.
Fuck this game. Fuck this game. Oh, man. I'm excited to hear about that one, though.
Oh, Outlast should be good.
But, yeah, that's all my news. Do you have anything else you want to chip in?
No, not really. Not that I know of. I mean, Dead by Daylight has been dated for consoles, apparently, which is awesome. It's going to be...
I don't know if I'm going to get into that or not. A 4-on-1 online... I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds Evolve-ish, but to be fair, it's done a lot better than Evolve did on PC. Like, it has done very well, and it looks fun. It's the kind of game, though, that you have to have friends to play with. But June 20th in North America and June 23rd in Europe.
I'll keep an eye on it. I'll keep an eye on it.
If I can convince a couple friends to pick it up, then it's definitely going to be worth it.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to contests, because we got some shit to announce. For the people listening, we've been doing giveaways on Gleam now. We just did our first one for Death Squared last week, and congrats to Brandon Sparks, who won that. Random draws, so you don't have to email us.
If you're shit at emailing or English, you can still win.
You just click buttons, and... you enter, and you could win stuff. And we have one going now for Trulon, the Shadow Engine, thanks to Head Up Games. That should be fun. Doing pretty well. And then a traditional old school contest that we're gonna do right now for The Inner World. You're probably excited about this one.
Yeah, it's been a little while. I didn't know that you even got a code for it.
Yeah, we have two codes for it.
Yes, and how many entries, out of curiosity?
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7.
All right, so there's actually going to be some decision-making to make
here. Yep, we're going to have to discuss this. And our first email to go over just so happens to be hanging out in chat, Latin Ruler, who says, good evening to my newfound favorite podcast, SML. I'd love to transform myself into the cartoon character Robit and help Laura find her dad and explore the uncanny world with emoji littered throughout, known as Aspasia, playing the role as a hero and becoming this strange cartoon character in this bizarre twist to better know the outcome in this game, The Inner World.
It's Aspasia, not Aspasia.
I don't fucking know. Asplosion wants to be a cartoon. Next one is from Aroto Tomato, who says, what a charming little game. I passed on it when I saw it in the Play Store, but since this is for the big screen, I want to get it and check it out. What the lovely people from Germany got when it comes to games. Wants to check out Germans. Next email from John Harvey, who says, I want to win a copy of The Inner World on Xbox One. Why, I hear you ask? Because I recently played Secret of Monkey Island 1 and 2, and now I need a new point-and-click fix. I rediscovered the genre recently, and I truly believe that sometimes you need a puzzle with an answer so strange and obscure that you'd never work it out, but eventually you do. Point-and-click games do it better than any others. Trying to play without a guide can be challenging because sometimes the puzzles don't make logical sense, but there's usually a weird internal game logic to them. Anyways, thanks for the chance. Keep up the good work, and I hope you go from strength to strength. Not sure what that means. But
I don't know either.
And that cel-shaded cartoony look is rather eye-catching, in my opinion. I'd like to see a little more. Loves
we know
point
what you mean,
and
John.
Click puzzles.
And this game does have some odd logic. So,
next up is from a random guy called Souza, who never wins anything. He says, hey Joe, I want it because the game seems to be a very interesting point-and-click adventure from what I saw and read so far. The story looks extremely enjoyable. I read very good reviews regarding the dialogue interactions and the easy, simplistic mechanics as well. The visual stylizations of the game are very cool too. Looks similar to a hand-drawn cartoon, characters having rigid features similar to sketches but very polished. The music is great. They did very good work from here from what I could tell in the streams when the game was released. I enjoyed a lot of the music. and it adds even more to the experience. The puzzles seem to be complex, but user-friendly at the same time, very well designed. This game is on my wish list. It came in the same week as Thimbleweed Park, another great point-and-click, and other great titles. That's why I haven't bought it myself yet. I really want this game, so I'll keep my fingers crossed, but I think someone cursed me with bad luck because I'm not winning anything lately. Thank you very much for the chance again. Adding a cat pick for good luck. On wish list, likes the game, sent cat. Next up is from Lucky Cal, who wrote in and said, I would like to win a copy of The Inner World because it looks awesome, and I'm that skint at the minute from what? Skint at the minute from my disability being cut. I don't know what skint is.
I'm assuming with the name Cal, probably some weird English phrase.
I'm thinking it might just be some kind of slang for being broke, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Since he says disability being cut, and I just had to cancel my car insurance, so I'm more stuck at home than ever before. Thank you, fingers crossed. Broke and skint. Next one is from Joe Carter, who says, Hi, thanks so much for the opportunity to win this game. I'm a huge fan of point-and-click games. I watched a playthrough of the first hour of The Inner World and was entranced. The complexity of the puzzles, but handled with such humor, was endearing. Would love the opportunity to win. Fan of point-and-click again. And finally, this was like a last-minute entry. Showed up 12 minutes ago.
Was it Swizzlers?
No, shockingly. from Og Bavna, who says, Growing up on the golden age of LucasArts and Sierra, I played almost all of the adventure games put out by those two. Then there were Telltale games. Don't get me wrong, love the series they've done, even Monkey Island and Sam & Max seasons, but you can't really beat that old-school adventure feel. Once in a blue moon, we get those. And this game hits that feeling so well. I gotta play this. I need this in my life. Oh, man. This is gonna be a tough one.
Yeah. There wasn't a whole lot that, stuck to me.
Yeah, nothing really jumped out at me this time. I did like John Harvey's. His was really well written.
Yes, I did like that one. I also like cows because of that weird word that we don't understand.
Skin.
And I like Oggs because he needs this in his life, and I understand that. Having played the game myself, I would be a worse person if I hadn't experienced that game.
So you're a fan of John, Lucky Cal, and Og, and I'm a fan of those three as well.
Wow. Well, we... damn it, we all agreed on everything.
Yeah. I wonder, anyone in chat have any input on this?
Yeah, that's shitty. Like, at first I was going to say, well, definitely John, because we both agreed with that right away.
Is there anyone of those three that absolutely sticks out to you?
I think Og sticks out the most. Just because he needs... The use of needs this in his life is the kind of... I don't know, enthusiasm I like.
Okay, so we'll give Og a win, since that one sticks out to you. And then, are you anywhere in between John and Cal? I think I'm leaning more towards John between the two. But we could always coin flip it. We could always Gears of War
coaster. I'm not strongly against either. Like, I really like John's writing, but I the fucking British slang, which I assume is British because his name. Like, who's named Cal in America? But I don't know. I like the slang. It's weird. So I'd say I can't decide. You should do a Gears flip.
the Gears coaster flip. So heads is going to be Lucky Cal, and tails or blank side will be John Harvey. So
all right,
here we go. I will show the camera so we could see it, if I could aim it right, because it is on Tails, and it goes to John Harvey.
All right. There you go, man.
The Gears coaster flip.
And now we don't got to feel bad.
the coaster flip decides all. So congrats to John Harvey and to Agbavna for winning our copies of The Inner World. I might send a Lucky Cal something hanging out in my list of codes, because they're unlucky enough to have their disability cut and lose their car insurance.
Yeah, so. I felt that pain too, being poor. I used to know all about that. So
I might have to send something small their way.
That'd be fun.
I feel bad. So yeah, thanks to everyone else for entering. Sorry you didn't win. We just didn't like you this time. So
yeah, just write better next time.
Yeah, get your shit together, people.
Aroto's was a close fourth, but everybody.
And then follow us on Twitter at the SML Podcast to keep up to date on all of our contests, including the Gleam contest that we're doing now for Trulon. We're going to have tons of cool stuff coming up in the future as well. Might have Voodoo Vince on Steam next week. Sadly, it's Steam, but, you know, it's still Voodoo Vince. You get Voodoo Vince remastered. Going to be awesome.
So it seems so weird getting a Steam code for a game that was originally Xbox only.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Nothing. We got the we get the codes, so it's like they decide what we get.
True. Well, let us jump to our reviews. We will get these out of the way, and then we'll take a break and get to our interview, which I'm excited about that. I'm super excited about that. But let's kick things off with Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap, developed by Lizard Cube, published by Dotemu, released April 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $19.99 with a Steam release set for June. Cursed into a half-human, half-lizard monstrosity by the Mecha Dragon, you're in search for a cure. The only way you can return to human form is to find the Salamander Cross, a magical item with the power to remove curses. With each dragon slain, the curse intensifies, transforming you into different animals. Explore large, interconnected locations populated with grumpy monsters and exotic dragons. I need to say right away, this game is fucking beautiful. Like, it is... This has got to be one of the better looking games that I've seen in recent memory. It's not that it's like hyper realistic. It's just all hand drawn. And the art style is just fantastic. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous game. And I wish I could just get like all of the wallpapers to make my background on the Xbox. Gameplays. I kind of want to call it a Metroidvania-ish style game, but the game predates like Super Metroid and Castlevania Symphony of the Night. The game was originally a Sega Master System game, and it holds up amazingly well for how old the game is. It could use with more guidance, I guess, but given how old the game is, you know, the games back then didn't really have that much hand-holding in it. It was basically, here's a world, go do stuff.
Well, I have a question for you, because you keep mentioning how old it is. Is this like a new game with just from the old series, or is this the old game just with a new skin?
This is the old game with a fresh coat of paint on top of it. And it is
okay.
It is so much the old game that they have graphic and audio toggles, so you can literally play the old game.
All right, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
You can hit the trigger and it switches to the 8-bit style. You could click the one analog stick and the music changes from the beautiful modern score to the original blips and bloops of the Master System days. Kind of like Halo, where you would just click a button and it switches to the old game.
Right.
Instantaneous. It is the old game with just a fresh coat of paint on it, and the coat of paint is gorgeous. Like, holy shit, I wish more games did this.
Like, yeah.
Take the classic game we love and just make it prettier. We don't need, you know, all these new enhancements and features and blah, blah, blah. Just make a game good. Take a good game and just make it prettier. Game is fairly open worldish, where you explore... I want to say they're not linear, but they're not open world. There's enough freedom there that you can wander around, but there's also enough guidance that it won't let you get to areas you're not supposed to get to yet. And as you get further in the game, it allows for more backtracking, so you could go to areas that you were in, re-explore them, find different secrets that you couldn't get to the first time, kill dragons, and you unlock different characters that you can transform between a half-human, half-dragon that shoots fire, a tiny little mouse that can walk on walls and ceilings, a sea creature that allows you to swim underwater instead of just slowly walking and only being able to jump once. There's a lot of different characters that you can unlock. The game does get pretty hard as you go further into it.
That's not surprising considering how old it is.
Yeah, it gets tough. And I'm playing on easy mode. Like, they threw in an easy mode that gives you significantly more life and lets you live significantly longer. And it gets tough, man. It's... old games were not forgiving at all.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. But, game is fantastic. I am absolutely loving it. The new visuals just layered on top of a game that 30 plus years on holds up really, really well. For the $20 price tag, I think it's absolutely a buy it.
Well, that's awesome.
And one of the craziest things about this game is if you played it on the original Master System and you have a password from those days from when you played it, you can use that password in this game. That is how faithful it is to the original game, that you can use 30-year-old passwords to continue your progress. And if you play this one, and for some crazy reason you want to hook up a Master System and fire up the original game, you can use your password from this game in the Master System version.
That's pretty awesome. I got a question for you with this. Now, on Steam, the original Wonder Boy through the, I believe, the Sega Mega Drive and Genesis Classics pack thing.
Okay.
You can get the game for $2.99. Do you think that much larger price tag is worth the new paint of coat? The new coat of paint?
Is it a Wonder Boy or Wonder Boy 3 in the collection?
Wonder Boy and Wonder Boy 2. I don't know if Wonder Boy 3 is even
Wonder
there.
Boy 3 Monster Lair.
I have no idea if Wonder Boy 3 is...
I don't think that's the right
one. Oh, either. No, it's Wonder Boy and then Wonder Boy 3. 2 isn't there.
I don't think that Wonder Boy 3 is the same Wonder Boy 3. See, when Chris Taylor was on, we were talking about how fucked up, like, the Wonder Boy history is.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
Like,
sorta.
If you could find the original, I don't know if the original is available to get on Steam or not.
I have no idea. I just know that it's called Wonder Boy and... or Wonder Boy in Monster World is what the original was called on Steam.
I don't believe that's the same either.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's... like I said, the Wonder Boy franchise is just so weird. But I still think it's worth the $20. So, how about that?
That's how.
Next game to talk about is called Mr. Shifty. This one developed by Team Shifty, published by Tiny Build. It released April 13th on the Nintendo Switch and Steam for $14.99. Other platforms are planned, but no date has been unveiled. Shift through bullets and master lightning fast takedowns in an all-new kind of action game from Tiny Build and Team Shifty. Mr. Shifty follows a teleportation-fueled heist to break into the world's most secure facility. The game plays a lot like Hotline Miami with the top-down, one-hit kill aspect to it, where you have to make your way through a stage. Most of them, you have to kill all the enemies and get to the exit. The big change here is that you don't have any kind of guns. All you have is melee, but you are allowed to teleport. You have 5 charges of the teleport that will regenerate as long as you don't use them all up right away. They regenerate fairly quickly, so it's designed to, like, teleport into a room, punch some dudes, and then teleport out. And then when they're like trying to run through the door to get to you, teleport behind them and knock the fuck out of them again. It's a really cool action game mixed with some puzzle elements in the later stages where you need to plan out like where you're going to go, how you're going to go through it, making sure that you know, some of the levels you might have weapons like oars or statue heads that you could throw, or they actually have a trident that you could like chuck at people and stick them to the wall. But there's a lot in the game to keep it fresh. There are, God, I want to say like 18 or 20 some stages in there. And each of the stages could be like a 5-10 minute level. The downside to that is that they're like, once you start a level, you need to finish it. Like if you quit in the middle of a level, you have to start it over.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So there's no mid-level checkpoints, but they, you know, they grade you based on, well, they don't grade you, but they keep track of your time and your number of deaths. And the point is to get through it as quick as you can without dying. So I think it's a really cool game. I did run into a slowdown issue on the Switch version of the game. They actually, there were people who were complaining about it, and the head of Tiny Build, Alex, I'm not even going to try his last name, he went on Reddit and he was addressing some of the complaints the people had and some of the issues that people were running into, and Team Shifty, I guess, were frustrated and leaving some kind of shitty replies on Twitter that Alex jumped in, and he's awesome that he's like jumping in. It's like, hey, listen, we're all humans. People get stressed. It's a game release. We can't find all the bugs ourselves. We tested these games on like tens of units in our office and didn't run into these bugs. That's the problem with hardware, is you're just not going to find everything. To the point where apparently when the system is in docked mode with the Switch, the systems that had neon Joy-Cons will have slowdown issues.
That's really weird that it's like specific to the,
yeah,
to the units that had that color.
Like, I experienced the same issue, and Alex was like, I wish my non-neon system did this so that we could figure it out.
Okay, so they just have gray ones over there.
I guess so. I guess the developer packages were just like the standard. But
that's not surprising, because you wouldn't think that there would be a difference.
I know. It doesn't make any sense. But the slowdown is real. They are working on a patch for that, and it will get fixed up and taken care of. The game is a lot of fun, though. It's very addictive to fail and then want to go back through and get a deathless run. Some of the stages could get a bit long, and it sucks when you die near the end of a stage and you have to start at the beginning again.
Yeah.
Or not at the beginning of the stage, but like some of the rooms, like each of the rooms is split up. If you die, you start the room over. Some of them like have long drawn out battle sequences where it's just wave after wave of enemies. And it, like, the one time I died on the last guy and I had to start it the fuck over. And when I beat it, I was like, really? I was at the last guy and I died? God damn it. For the $15, I think it's another one that's worth buying. I really enjoy it. It's finally something else that you could play a Hotline Miami style game on.
Yeah, so it's cool that it's actually on the Switch. I think it should have been called Mr. Switchy.
I know, seriously. Like, why didn't they do that? It should have been.
I doubt that name was taken.
Anyway, speaking of Tiny Build, one of your favorite Tiny Build games actually got some DLC this week. The Final Station got the Only Traitor DLC, developed by Do My Best Games, published by Tiny Build, released April 19th on Steam for $4.99. While the train is heading to the final station, you are going on a road trip through the dying world with the ultimate goal of finding the last remaining shelter. You'll discover new locations, revisit familiar places, encounter new dangerous enemies, and find more clues about the mystery of visitations. CJ, what'd you think about the DLC?
It's interesting. It's pretty much more the same game, but now instead of the original way it worked is that you were just trying to find survivors in each location. At least I believe that's how it was. It has been a long time since I played the original. I haven't played the original since it first came out. But I believe that that was the case where you were just riding on a train trying to find survivors in each of the places and finding more ammo and stuff like that. This time, you can only have one survivor with you at a time. So, and those survivors actually have, like, stats that can help you out while in the car. And so you're just driving from place to place, and every time you stop at a place, you're going to need food, water, and gasoline to get to the next place to eventually find the last shelter. Or at least that's the goal. The different stats for the survivors are stuff like some of them are better at crafting, so it would take, I believe it takes less, fuck, what is the word for that? And it's a really easy word, so I don't know why I'm forgetting it. Like, I don't just know. Consumable items, something like that. It's just like, it would take less items in order to make a health pack or bullets.
And, supplies, ingredients.
Yeah, supplies. That's what I was looking for.
Slabah.
I don't know. Or some of them are better at healing. So if you lose a lot of health in a stage and you want to be healed while on the road, some of them will give you more health points than other ones. Besides that, they don't really make much of a difference. Like, there is a sociability stat as well for them, so I guess that's how talkative they are and how much they reveal the story. But if you want, unlike the normal version of the game where you're on the train and you have to take care of them while the train's going, there's nothing really happening while on the road. So you can skip these sequences. And in the regular game, of course, you had to take care of them, so you couldn't skip the sequences. But besides that, on the my only complaint with the road trips is that the menu isn't exactly intuitive for a controller.
Mm.
It's annoying, and it's a little bit difficult to see what you're actually like hovering over for each option using a controller. So I don't know if that's something that could be fixed or just make it easier to tell what you're actually on, but it's just not very useful on a controller.
Yeah.
As for the actual places that you stop, I guess there's places that you revisited. A lot of the game looks the same, so it's hard to tell like if there's things that are different. And that's not to say that it's bad that they look the same. It just that is what it is in this game when everything's pretty much gray or black. Or white. Like, it's a very dark game the whole way through. So, noticing things is hard to do. Like, I just didn't really notice places that I'd been before. It all looked new every time. But the gameplay itself is still the same game. It's fun. You still, you walk from side to side trying to find stuff in buildings and killing all of these weird corrupted viral things. Like, there are new ones. There's a spitter asshole who's really mean. I really don't like them.
A spitting asshole doesn't sound like fun.
they spit, like, this green goo at you, and it fucking hurts like hell. It takes away a lot of your health, and it's hard to avoid getting hit by it. I found out later that apparently, according to other people, you can actually hit them back at them using your melee weapon. So, like, a baseball. I did not know that when I was playing it. So I saved bullets for every time I ran into them because they would take a lot of shots, but it's the best way to avoid being hit by them.
No.
Bullets in this one seem more common than they did in the regular game. I think maybe it's because you have to shoot less enemies, but it feels like I have bullets most of the time. Whereas I remember there were points in the regular game in which it was like, shit, I have nothing. Like, I don't know what to do. This, yeah. Like, I almost always have something. However, health packs in this are much more limited than they were in the regular game. In the regular game, you would just find them all over the place, at least one or two in every location. This, I have not found one in a location aside from the very first area, and I had to use it pretty much immediately because I had forgotten how the game played, so I was still getting used to it again. But at that, my only other thing with this is just I don't know why they added it. Like, it gives more story, but it isn't needed. Like, it doesn't feel like it was required for them to add it.
Just it's the DLC fun. In general?
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't really matter if you play it or not. I don't know why they added it, but, I mean, it's still fun to play it. There's still more of the game there if you enjoyed the regular game and you don't want to play that again. And it is only $5, so it's like, you can't say that they're ripping you off with that. It's a fun thing for the price.
Yeah.
So
$5, what's your verdict?
Honestly, I'm leaning towards the fuck it, why not?
For that this. Makes sense. I mean, like, if you're a fan of the Final Station, you're going to want to play it. But
exactly. It's not like it's not required, but it's not a bad purchase at $5. So that right there pretty much means fuck it, why not?
Yeah. Hey, sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Late Shift, developed by Control Movie, published by Wales Interactive. This one released April 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $12.99. Late Shift is a high-stakes FMV crime thriller. Forced into a brutal London heist, you must choose your own adventures in this interactive cinematic experience with adaptable storylines that lead to one of seven endings. Your decisions are you. As it states, this is very much a choose-your-own-adventure kind of experience. It's hard to call it a game. The last cinematic FMV game that Wales put out was The Bunker, and that was very much like a point-and-click adventure-style game done with FMV.
Yeah, this game looks sick. Like, I want to pick it up.
This is basically a crime thriller movie where you're making decisions in it.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
It is really, really neat. You could probably do a playthrough depending on the choices you make, because some of them will lead to a longer episode, I guess, a longer movie for the most part than others.
Yeah.
Could take anywhere like an hour and a half ish, and it really is one of those things where plan it out that you're sitting down to watch a movie, not that you're playing a game.
Yeah,
but
well, that's kind of why I'm interested in it, because I'm taking a break from games,
yeah,
for the most part. So but it's you, like you might this seems this so one. Much more movie than game,
and it very
that I think
much
I'd actually
is.
Have a fun time.
It's, you know, it is shot like a movie. I believe it originally was a movie, and I'm not sure if it was like expanded into this form or how it was originally released. But this one, it is a movie. It is all real time, where the choices will pop up on the screen, and you only have so much time to pick one. And if you don't pick one, it picks whatever is highlighted, and the movie continues. So it's not like in The Bunker, where if there's a decision that you have to make, the footage will just like loop or play and then rewind and then play and rewind. Like you only have a few seconds to make a decision, and some are going to be quicker than others.
That's interesting.
I actually played through it twice, trying as hard as I could to make drastically different choices. And it changes a lot. Like the second half of the game to me was completely different compared to the first time that I did it. Although you would still see familiar, like, oh, well, this footage happened here. Oh, this is how they rectified that decision. Like, oh, well, I didn't do this. How are they going to address it? Oh, well, they added this little scene, and then it all still links together.
So is the ending always the same?
No, there are seven endings to the game.
Awesome.
So, like, both of the ones I've seen so far have been bad endings.
Oh, that's a shame.
I don't know how many, like, if there's going to be a handful of good, a handful of bad. I don't know if there's going to be any happy endings. I don't know. I want to keep playing it and find out. I think my only downside to this is that on subsequent playthroughs, it's hard to keep your attention. Like, I wish there was a way to skip through some of the longer scenes where there's no decisions.
That's true. I imagine, because at a certain point, it's just like watching the same movie over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that would be fun after one or two playthroughs. It's like, all right. And then there's seven playthroughs to go through. That doesn't sound entertaining.
There's possibly more than seven playthroughs, because there's going to be different decisions that you're going to have to go through. There's going to be times where you're like, did I mean to do that? And then you'll, you know, like hit start and go to the menu. And then when you load it back up, it starts that whole chapter over. So that, you know, I had a time where one of my choices ended up killing someone. And I'm like, I didn't mean to do that. And I quit out and I had to replay like 5 minutes of it.
Oh, yeah, that sucks. I know Telltale does the same thing where it's like you begin at a chapter point. And it's just like, just save where you were.
Yeah. It's just a lot of that time that I replayed was just watching the scenes, which I don't mind because it's a really entertaining story and a really cool movie. But, you know, once I did the whole experience, when I got to those scenes that I was familiar with the second time around, I just wanted to get through it. So I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that frustration.
For completionists who want to get everything, they're probably going to get frustrated at the fact that they're going to have to sit through some longer scenes repeated times. And of course, someone's going to have to get a spreadsheet of like, you have to make this decision to get to this, this to get to this.
Yeah, that's a good point as well.
In two playthroughs of the game, I experienced, is it 13 out of 14 or like 11 out of 12 different chapters in the game? So there's still stuff I didn't do in the game, even though I played through it twice with, from what I could tell, completely different choices. Like, if there was a choice that I saw the first time, I made sure to pick something different.
Yeah, but that's possible that you had that things link like that, so you got to select that the choice you already selected and then select a different path, and then it's like just all over the place, that shit.
Yeah. Overall, though, for $13, if you're looking at this as a movie that you're going to play through once, maybe twice, and, you know, move on from it, I think it's absolutely worth picking up, but not everybody is going to like this.
Because it's already hard to sell a FMV game.
Yeah, it is a movie. I will say it's well acted, it's well shot, it's a great story. It kept me entertained the whole time twice through. It was a really, really entertaining time, but because it's not for everyone, I got to give it a try. But if you're looking for more of a movie than a game, you're going to love it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, good stuff. Next game to talk about is called Mousebot, developed and published by our friends at Vector Unit. It released April 3rd on iOS and Android as a free-to-play title with optional microtransactions for unlocking various cosmetic items or activating checkpoints in the game. Guide Mousebot through mazes of fantastical mechanical mousetraps created by the cat scientists of Cat Lab. Dodge giant metal kitty crushers, leap over mouse-grinding roller graders, evade scary mines and lasers, and platform your way across pools of bot-melting acid on an epic quest for cheese and freedom. We had our friend Jacob Garner cover this one because he likes covering mobile stuff, and he sent in his email, so I will get to that right now. He starts off, "Guys, this is it. I honestly feel like I found the holy grail of iOS gaming, and it comes in the form of Mousebot, Escape from Cat Lab, from Vector Unit." Which, first off, doesn't shock me, because Vector Unit's awesome.
Yeah, well, obviously.
"It seamlessly blends driving and platforming in an incredibly small file size, yet still manages to have solid controls, beautiful visuals, and a soundtrack that never gets annoying. You guide your Mousebot through a maze, avoiding traps like buzzsaws and stompers, while collecting bits of cheese to unlock new skins and accessories for your bot. As I said, the controls are solid, they're amazingly simple. There's a button on each side of your phone screen to turn left or right, and there's a button above each to jump. They aren't intrusive and still manage to work great if you have sausage fingers like Joe and I." Yes, very true. "The visuals are impressive, especially when you consider the game only takes up 68 meg on your phone." Which, again, I'm not shocked, because how big are the Riptide games?
Exactly.
And those look amazing. So, once again, the compression wizards at Vector Unit make a gorgeous game with a tiny file size. "Already a plus for people with little space left on their phones, which would have helped with my previous iPhone. The design of the levels aren't overly complicated, yet still a challenge, and have tons of replay value. The levels are short enough that the game is perfect for a commute or when you have 2-3 minutes to spare. The game is free to play, but the premium edition will get rid of ads, give you unlimited lives, and some credits to buy skins and accessories that you want. If I remember correctly, it's only $2.99 and well worth the money that you pay for it. There are still some other skins and accessories that can be bought for $2.99 each, which seems a little steep, but they're fun cosmetic additions, so mileage may vary. I found the free-to-play version to work just fine, even without unlimited lives. I was able to complete most of the levels without issue. The team has updated the game a few times since I was given my review copy, so they're obviously working hard to make sure the game is the best it can be. Mousebot Escape from Cat Lab blew away my expectations in every way, and it's currently my favorite game for iOS. I highly recommend it for everyone, and taking up only 68 meg on your phone, you don't have an excuse not to.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, how the fuck do they make their games look so good with so tiny?
I mean, for phones, you kind of have to. You can't be too big on a phone.
Like, I have games on my phone that are a couple hundred meg or even over a gig. But Mousebot, it looks gorgeous, and it's 68 goddamn meg. Like, again,
yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
Again, look at the Riptide games. They're like 400 meg, and they're fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
That's why every time Matt Small has been on the show, I've asked him, how the fuck do you make your games look so good and so tiny? There's no other way to ask it. How the fuck do they do it? Man, I didn't notice this, but Latino, he asked how many achievements were in the game. I'm assuming that he meant for the late shift.
Yeah.
I should have been paying attention to chat. That's what happens when I get an email. I focus on that instead of the conversation in the chat.
I think there was like 13.
There are 20 in the game.
Oh, wow. There's a lot more than I said.
Yeah, there's one for finding all the main chapters, one for watching 4 endings, one for watching 7 endings, and then a bunch of miscellaneous ones.
Probably for each different little choices and stuff.
But they're very specific choices that you have to make in the game. Like, for example, the one was like you're being... I hate giving away too much, but you're kind of being... tortured in a way, and it's to just like deal with it and hold out until it's so. Yeah, there's a bunch of different ones that you just gotta replay it and luck out, and they're all technically secret achievements. So
yeah, I noticed that there's a lot of those.
Oh, man. Anyway, next game to talk about is Neo Geo Collection, Arcade Archives, Neo Geo Samurai Showdown 4, console version developed and published by Hamster. This one released April 13th on the Nintendo Switch for $7.99. Yes, we're covering a Switch Neo Geo title. Samurai Showdown 4 is a fighting game released by SNK in 1996. Warriors with their own respective goals will challenge Amakusa, who came back from hell and has returned to life again and plans to conquer the modern world. Attacks using the anger gauge can lead to unexpected outcomes and make battles even more intense. One of my biggest gripes that I have had with a lot of the fighting games in the Arcade Archive series has been the difficulty, and I am happy to say that Samurai Showdown 4 doesn't really have that issue. It can get challenging on the harder difficulties, but, you know, that's kind of the point of harder difficulties. I made it through the game fairly easily on some of the lower settings and had a decent enough challenge on medium settings, but it wasn't as outright frustrating and cheesy as some of the other fighting games in the series. Samurai Showdown 4, it holds up really well visually. It's still a great looking game. I forgot how bloody it was. Like, there's some serious blood slashes. Splashes in this game when you're hitting people, which I forgot about that. But I guess when you have swords and you're cutting people, you'll see blood go flying. Clearly it's not gory like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
But for most fighting games in the day, like they weren't really bloody. So seeing that was kind of a cool little shock to me because I forgot about that. Controls are very simple. You have the 4 face buttons, which are 3 different strength attacks, and then a kick button. There are, most of the special moves in the game are Street Fighter-ish, where it's like quarter circles, half circles, stuff like that. There are also special button combinations, like if you hit the A and B buttons together, you'll do a special like combo attack, or if you hit 3 of the buttons together, it'll do like that anger gauge, the anger move, which can like do stupid, stupid damage if you land it. Because
yeah,
you could fuck that up. I even found out the hard way that if you hold like the player start button, you'll kill yourself. I went to hit the button to like just get to the pause or to figure out like what the buttons were. I'm clicking around with them, and I held down the one shoulder button, which was basically like the start button, and the guy just took his sword and stabbed himself and killed himself. Which was that's hilarious to me. I thought it was hilarious. Samurai Showdown 4 is also one of the most meme-worthy games out there. This is the game that when you win a round, it says Victoli.
Really?
With an L. Wow. English, man. Fucking English. But yeah, it's the story is goofy enough because it was mid-90s. The yeah. English is Englishy enough. It is an entertaining game. It is not stupidly hard. There's plenty of characters to learn and play through. For $8, if you're a fan of the retro 2D fighting games, I think this one's worth picking up.
Yeah, and the price isn't bad.
I eagerly await this one to show up on the Xbox as well, because I'm sure that'll happen eventually. So, yeah, Samurai Showdown 4, definitely one of the better fighting games in the ACA series. Next game to talk about is called Forts. Developed and published by Earthwork Games. It released April 19th on Steam for $14.99. Forts is
14.
A... $14. Motherfucker. Forts is a physics-based RTS where foes design and build custom bases, arm them to the teeth, and blast their opponents' creations to rubble. CJ, what did you think of Forts?
It's different. It's like a mixture of RTS, tower defense, and bridge constructor. And that's a weird way to put it. But, you basically just build up a fort, really, with, different, like, boxes that, are made of wood, obviously, and you have to make sure that they can support the weapons that you put on them, make sure that they're structurally sound, so that they don't fall over as soon as they get shot. Or if you put too much, it could just fall over on its own without being shot. If you just mess it up and you don't make it very stable, your fort will die before it even gets hit.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, it is a little bit bridge constructory. So if you enjoy those kind of games, this should be fun right off the bat, because you got to be able to actually make a stable base. And then on top of that, you have your like a tower defense out aspect where you have to build weapons on your fort to destroy the other forts.
And is it basically like a one-on-one battle, or?
It can be bigger than a one-on-one battle, I believe. I've never had anything bigger than a one-on-one battle, but I believe it can be bigger. It's up to 8 players in online multiplayer with co-op and team deathmatch.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so it could get a lot more crazy than that. There's a campaign mode, which was interesting and kind of funny. I like the weird writing. Graphically, it felt very much like Rocket Riot, where it was just weird. And the character designs were interesting and weird, but they were fun.
Like goofy cartoony?
Yeah, goofy cartoony is exactly what it's like. I can't really think of anything I disliked aside from the fact that the screen scrolls too quickly if you hit it with like your mouse or something. I don't like all of the different ways to move the screen around, and I don't like that when you zoom out your base is not centered, which is weird.
I'm looking at some of the screenshots, and it looks like when you zoom out it basically just shows the whole play field.
Yeah, that's basically what it does.
It reminds me of like Scorched Earth and Worms, where it's just killing.
I mean, it's artistically it could be compared to Worms in a way. Like obviously it is different, and you have different weapons on your fort. Like you have a mortar, and you do have to control the weapons, by the way. So when you click a weapon, you then have to click where it shoots. And then it's actually like the machine gun. you had to click each time you wanted to shoot a burst of like 5 or 6 shots. So it's not like you can just build them and then let them do their own thing. You actually have to control them. And they can overheat if you shoot them. So it's not exactly tower defense. It just looks tower defense. Like a tower defense game, they would shoot on their own. But in this game, it's more like a real-time strategy game, which I guess that's why I don't call it tower defense. It just looks tower defense-ish.
I see one of the Steam reviews calling it a hybrid of Worms and Polybridge.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I dig the visual style too. I like cartoony visuals in games.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun game. It's weird. I don't know if it's worth the $15, but hey, it could be a lot worse. Like $14.99 is not a terrible price tag. It definitely fits it.
Overall, what do you think?
I'd say try it. It's definitely worth playing. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, I didn't dislike anything about it at all. I thought it was fun, and I thought it was creative and cool and cute. So
I dig that it not only has the 8 player online, but 28 single player missions as well. So
yeah, so if you're not plenty, if you don't have the option to play with other people, you can play it by yourself.
Nice, sounds good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Final game to talk about is called Rolling Bob. Amazing name. Developed and published by Moon Factory, it released April 13th on the PS4 for $14.99. For the first time in the PlayStation 4 system, draw freely with simple moves of your controller. Use your ability to draw for all sorts of things. Create platforms, walls, walk face down, redirect energy, and much more. Besides, be epic final bosses along 30 different levels, or defiant levels. This is, if anybody is familiar with the old DS game, Kirby's Canvas Curse, where... Nope. It's basically your character is, for the most part, an auto runner, although you can accelerate and hit the brakes if you hold down the one trigger. And you have to draw on the screen using the motion capabilities of the PS4 controller to draw like ramps to go over spike pits or to move up levels and get collectibles and stuff like that.
That sounds pretty cool.
It's a really cool gameplay element and gameplay experience that I think the only issue is that it's marred by the complexity of trying to do it with a controller.
Because
the way it works is I initially thought that you would like use the touchpad on the PS4 controller, and I'm like, how is that going to work? But it uses the gyro controller so that there's a dot on the screen and you know, based on how you move and tilt your controller, the dot moves around. And then when it's in a certain area, you have to hit the X button and hold it to draw lines, which while a character's moving and you're like trying to hold triggers down to move or hit them both to turn or hold the one to hold the brakes, trying to draw those lines, the multitasking for my old man brain, it got rough.
Do you think this game would be easier if it was more like Frew or Commander Cherry, where you created the platforms using like a like your body?
I don't
like
know,
a PlayStation control, like, move camera sensor thingy.
If they had move controls in this, where you just like pointed at the screen and drew it that way, I think it would work really well. The problem there is that you don't have the added controls to like accelerate or brake or to switch direction. And it would have to be an entirely automated game where you're just drawing. It's just trying to draw two-handed with a PlayStation controller is very, very hard to get used to.
Yeah, it seems awkward.
It is, and it can be awkward, but if you stick with it, there's a really enjoyable game underneath. Going through all the levels, collecting all the bits and all the collectibles and characters that you have to rescue, a lot of fun. They grade you on like 5 stars when you're done, and whether or not you saved all the 3 dudes that are hidden in each stage. You get like multipliers based on how many you saved and if you collected all the bits and whether or not you died in the stage, which some of the stages could be tricky to get through without dying. And there's some decently long stages, so if you get to like the last chunk and then you finally die, you're like, motherfucker. I honestly would have loved to see this like on the Vita.
Yeah.
With an actual touch screen to draw things.
Yeah, I think this game would probably fit Vita, not NES, I almost said. 3DS.
Yeah. But I guess their goal was to do something on a console, and I think they did a good job with it, because it's like drawing with a controller, it can't be easy. It's something that you're definitely going to have to practice. But if you can get over the hurdle of the controls, I think it's worth trying. It's an enjoyable time, 30 stages, lots of collectibles in the game. There's plenty of content there for the $15. It just comes down to if your brain can multitask enough. So
that makes sense.
I give it a try. It's enjoyable, but it is definitely not going to be for everyone. So yeah, those are the reviews. We did our giveaways. We did our news. I guess that's it.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, enjoy the music, and we will be back with Clayton of Beep Games to talk about Voodoo Vince.
Voodoo Vince.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. I am joined by a fantastic guest at this time. Clayton Kozlernik, is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, I tried. Clayton of Beep Games, the creator, the man behind Voodoo Vince. Welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be here.
It's been how many years since Voodoo Vince came out on the original X? I'd say the Xbox One, but that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of confusing. You see OG Xbox or the proto whatever Neanderthal Xbox. yeah, and it was 13 years and change. It was like September, I believe, of 2003 when the game first came out.
And now Vince is back. What led to this happening?
Not a lot of common sense or well thought out plans. it's a thing where I've always wanted to see Vince come back. You know, I think I've mentioned in some stuff recently how we had a lot of just very strange custom code. It wasn't strange, I mean, at the time, but things like the rendering, the shaders and stuff was all done in old assembly and things like that in Vince. So there were just so many custom elements to what we did that it was really hard to do that backwards compatibility stuff that happened on the 360. So we kind of skipped a whole generation, and it was maybe probably a couple years ago when I first I talked with Phil Spencer saying, I think if this is going to happen, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go do it myself. And he was, pretty supportive of the idea, which was really cool. And I don't know if there's some background with Phil with the game, because
he's on record as saying it's one of his favorite games.
Yeah, and the reason is because it's the first game he finished with his two daughters when they were little kids. Ah. So I mean, it's the sort of association that isn't always there. It's not always logical. it's not always about the critic ratings or anything like that. It's just like sometimes sometimes our the games we love choose us, and that he just happened to have played that one with his kids. So we've talked about it on and off, and then it was really almost a year ago now. I think it was about 11 months ago, 10 months ago that I just got a project going. That's a happy looking cat right there, by the way.
This is Bean.
Oh, hi Bean, how you doing? Anyway, yeah, so brought a programmer, one guy on board, just on my own, just a sort of evening weekend kind of thing, and one programmer named Steve Loshauer came on board, and he was really good at kind of going on these archaeological expeditions into this really old code, and just getting the game compiling and running again. We had to sort of evolve it through several generations of DirectX because the old Xbox was on a really strange kind of quasi DirectX. So it was 7.1 point something or something. Anyway, added a couple more programmers over the next couple of months, and I'd say by last summer we were kind of just going full bore, remastering the game, started upgrading the textures, started getting some of the features we wanted in there, and we announced in October, and then here we are 6 months later after that, and the game is out.
It is out. It is here. I've been spending probably way too much time with it considering how much other stuff I have to play for the show, but I honestly forgot how enjoyable this game was. Because I played it back on the original Xbox, and in my mind, the original Xbox was such a unique time with games because Microsoft seemed to try everything. They would just throw shit at a wall and see what stuck, because you would get stuff you had Halo back then, you had Project Gotham Racing on there. What was the...
Yeah, I think there was. Yeah. And there were some other character-based games. And it's funny, I was talking with somebody, I think at PAX East last month, about it was this kind of interesting sort of potluck of all kinds of games, And I think back really fondly on even Crimson Skies and there was even people out there. Somebody was saying how much they love Bloodwake. It's just crazy boat racing game that was out.
I miss those days of Microsoft where they would try Mad Dash Racing. Who the hell would release a game like that now? As full retail title. That's something you would see a $4.99 indie now. But back then, that was different. That was unique. I miss those days, and Voodoo Vince is just a throwback to those days of Microsoft trying different things and trying new things, and I'm happy to get time with the game once again.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, and I think kind of back to your original question, I guess I just didn't want the game to be lost, and that there's a real danger of that, I think, with old games when technology moves on too far, it becomes, I think, increasingly difficult to get the old code running, get everything just kind of reconstituted. Things change so much over the years, and it's still one of my favorite projects ever. The time, the team, everything about it was something I'm just really, really, it's really close to me. So it was just really kind of a personal thing. Like I said, not like thought out, this incredible business plan or anything like that. I just really wanted to make sure Vince could come back and be played by people who remember it, and maybe catch a few new people along the way.
It hasn't been focus tested to death. It's just, it's an honest game. It's just,
well, it's funny you say that. I mean, we did have focus tests because Microsoft was new to consoles, but they were definitely good at getting data from people, players and stuff, and learning about that. So we had play tests, and we went through that. So things like where Vince is saying, hey, why don't I go up there and do something, that a lot of that comes out of play tests where people might have been getting lost or not noticing things enough. So we had some of that in there, but you're right in the sense that today, I don't think you would do a game like this without a map. You know, like I want to be able to see exactly where I am. I know exactly what's around the next corner, and you know, that sense of like, hey, it's okay to be a little bit lost and just feel your way around and see what you find.
Just explore.
Sure, and you know, we kind of had to do that because our levels are tiny. I mean, really, if you look at the whenever I'm like in the game developing it, and I like fly around the levels and like zoom way out, and I can see all the level geometry. They are just tiny. They wouldn't be. They'd barely be like, you know, a nook or a cranny, you know, in most the big games that we make today. And those are great games, but man, we really had to make that content stretch back then.
See, but a lot of the levels, like there's some that are like hallways and stuff like that that are meant to feel smaller, but some of those levels, they just feel much bigger than they might appear to be.
Yeah, I think that, of course, part of that's Vince. He's really small, so so we couldn't make big levels, but we could make a really small guy.
You're tricking all of us.
It's all with, forced perspective.
We have been hoodwinked.
That's right. Dirty tricks.
Carnage in chat is saying, just like Yooka-Laylee, it's okay to get lost, just a throwback to the old school games.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I was talking about that not too long ago with Ron Gilbert, you know, who did Thimbleweed Park, and talking about how, you know, befuddlement was kind of a valid thing to do in a game back then. And I think there's been sort of this trend occasionally to avoid it, you know, and because, you know, we don't want people to feel dumb, you know, and it's like, well, it's okay, though, if they spend some time just thinking and wandering around, it's okay.
So. Yeah, just, you know... Even earlier in this episode, we were talking about the Wonder Boy that just came out, how that's basically just a Master System game and with a new coat of paint, and it drops you in. It's like, here, play the game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, wow, some of those Master System games were brutal.
I'll say Wonder Boy holds up really well. That's another one. I haven't tried it yet, but
it looks really good.
It feels like we're in another kind of retro renaissance going on now.
I think so. I wonder, you know, part of it, I think, is sentimentality. And that's one thing I think, God, I think half the people, at least, that I hear from remember Vince or grew up with Vince or were a kid when they played Vince. And so there's that feeling of kind of wanting to revisit their youth or like, you know, harken back to a time maybe when life was simpler for them, at least, you know. It wasn't for me, but, you know, for the people who were kids then, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the story I was, you know, mentioning about Phil. There's just that attachment that is just kind of undeniable, you know, no matter what the game is. And, you know, so I think that's part of what maybe drives some of that desire to play these games again. But I also think they're also a lot of them damn good games.
Yeah,
they're interesting things that you have to, you know maybe rewire your brain a little bit sometimes to play them, and that's really cool.
How does it feel coming out around the same time as other 3D platformer kind of throwback titles like Yooka-Laylee and Snake Pass?
Oh yeah, it's like there's been a bunch
timing.
It's been cool. I mean, I feel like it's kind of nice. You know, it's cool that, you know, games that are colorful and they have some humor and some charm and are, you know, it's just great to see that there is an audience for those games. So I love those games. So I'm thrilled. You know, I think I would, you know, I'm a big fan of the genre. So I mean, I buy and play, I think, everything on every platform that comes out. So if there were 10 more of them tomorrow, I would buy 10 more tomorrow. So.
I agree there. I've been enjoying all of them. I do have a question, though, since you helped make Voodoo Vince, clearly. Mm-hmm. Why are 3D platformer cameras so difficult to get right?
Wow, we could spend a whole show talking about that.
Because you look at the reviews of Snake Pass and people are like, oh yeah, it's a lot of fun, but the camera's a bitch. Yooka-Laylee, yeah, it's a lot of fun, big open worlds, the camera's a bitch.
And I think the best you can hope for when you're making a camera in a game like that is no one notices your camera. It's like, if no one says anything about the camera, you know, it's always tough to get that exactly right. It's a mix of things when you're designing the camera. You know, you have to think about the field of view. You want to see enough of the world that you can see where you want to go. You need to be at least a little bit close to the character so they're not just a little tiny cursor, you know, yeah. way far away. And that's always a problem with third-person follow cams. You don't always feel close to the character that you're playing, and you know, you want to have that sense of like, you know, you are him, you are Vince, you're seeing things as he sees them. So where's that balance between I see enough, but I can also understand the character and you know, connect and relate to the character. And then beyond that, there is just the long list of things that make a camera. There's AI involved, so like when it goes behind something, it says, "Oh, I better look for that character that I'm supposed to be looking at again." There's physics on it, so it either bounces or slides off of things, and then there's special in and out points in certain areas, so it changes its setting, like when you go in or out of a tunnel. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on, and all that requires, you know, months and months, if not years, of tuning as you go, and you know, you do the best you can. One thing I'm noticing about Vince is, I mean, at the time, camera was all right in 2003. But looking at it now up close, because a lot of people are playing on PC screens now, so they're sitting really crazy close to the game versus across the room on a TV.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one request we had on from some Steam players is, can you put like a field of view slider in? I think a couple of people there already broke open a hex editor and added one.
Oh wow!
and that took one day. I mean, that's the difference about that audience versus, you know, maybe the traditional console audience. But it's really interesting to see people doing that, because I think the demands and needs of a camera will also change with size of the screen, how far you are from it. People have varying degrees of, you know, how woozy they'll feel based on if it's too fisheyed versus, and if it's not enough, you don't see enough of the world. So it's just this incredible balancing act. And yeah, you don't always get it right 100% of the time. I definitely wish I could have spent more time maybe revisiting the camera on the remaster, but you know, because we were really a four-person team, we had to really be careful about like, where are we going to spend our time and effort as we make this version of the game.
Yeah, I honestly think the camera might be one of my only minor gripes with the game, and sure. It's not so much the positioning of it, it's like how it likes to snap back behind you.
Oh, interesting. Are you managing the camera a lot when you play, like yes. with the right stick?
Yes, like okay. especially when
Are you pulling the right trigger a lot? Because that snaps it behind
no.
Vince.
No, oh, it's okay. Not like the instant snap behind you. It's like if you position the camera above you, because in platforming stuff, I'll try to put the camera above me so I have a good view of where I'm trying to land. I'll do the jump, and then I'll just be like, all right, we're going to go back behind you now.
Just right. Yeah, it's that's the amount that it drags the camera behind Vince. Yeah. So like it'll try to sort of like, oh, if I'm moving, it's going to try to show you what's in front of Vince whenever possible. But yeah, that's not 100% of the time a convenient thing. So yeah, yeah it's yeah, man. So you kind of see the situation. It's like it's one of the tougher things. And yeah, it's a sorry.
Hey, it happens. What are you going to do? It's your game. I'm not going to tell you how to make a game.
Oh, hey, I see a question about where I came up with the various voodoo powers.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Wagerman in, I hope I said that right, Wagerman in the chat.
Yeah, and who I do see quite a bit on Twitter, by the way. Hello.
You have a fan.
Yes, there he is.
And he followed us. Oh, man, you poor guy.
Well, I did retweet that we're doing this interview. So you can expect at least two or three people showing up. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, we have a handful of people in there. Latinos, yeah, awesome. Hanging out. Carnage dropping by. I love Carnage. Good to see him hanging out here.
And by the way, thank you everyone for the congrats on the remaster. I'm super, super happy about it. So the voodoo powers, it's interesting. We realized early we couldn't do a complete different animation for every single voodoo power we wanted to do. So you'll probably notice that the voodoo powers do one of like four or five different things to the monsters. They'll squish the monster. They'll disintegrate the monster. They will just beat up the monster. There's a number of things that they will do. They'll sort of contort and jump around and things like that. And those are all, you know, so we had to kind of then make sort of like categories of voodoo attacks that fit those things that would go with those, because, you know, we couldn't just do an infinite number of, obviously, of reactions from all the monsters, because that's a ton of time to do all those animations. So it was more like, well, okay, it was just more of a, let's make a list and let's put it up on a dry erase board, let's go to lunch and talk about it. And it was over the course of, you know, a while that we came up with the list. I did an early pass in the very first draft of the design document in 2001, and then we revised it a little bit along the way. We had some ideas, and some of the jokes were better than others. Some worked, some didn't. So we just kind of kept revising it until probably early 2003 when we did that. And I think there's, what, 38, 40? There's a pretty high number of different jokes of terrible things that happened to Vince.
That's a lot. Like, what are some of your favorites?
I like a couple of the early ones. I like the electromagnet a lot because I think it has nice timing, you know, where he holds the magnet and makes the buzzing sound. And it's kind of like, oh, hey, what's this? And then blah, all the metal things in the universe just sort of converge on Vince. I like that one a lot. I like the angry god, that giant foot that just squishes them. I think it's because I like Monty Python. So, I mean, it's just cool to see the giant foot just go squish, you know, and those are two of my top favorites. So the alien attack, another early one. I like that one too because I just think the animation and the sound effect are really cool on the little flying saucer that appears and disintegrates Vince.
Were you guys thinking of adding any new ones, or did you add any new ones?
No, they're the same original ones. You know, just getting all of the effects and all the animations and getting all those 15-year-old Maya files all behaving correctly. Was kind of enough. So I'd love to be able to do more of that kind of stuff, you know, and it's probably again not a good sensible plan, but I mean I would love to be able to down the road either do add-ons or something to the game,
like a sequel.
I would love to do a sequel, of course. It's one of those things though where I think I described a little bit, even in 2003 it was really hard to make the case when you were pitching a game to publishers. And I mean, I was lucky enough to, you know, have some just really cool supportive people at Microsoft who kind of liked the idea, and they were supportive of the idea from the get go. But, man, it's really, really, you know, you kind of have to see how things do. And, you know, and I know that sounds kind of wimpy to say, oh, you know, maybe if it sells, but I just can't keep making, you know, just making games, every game I want to, I guess. It's sadly a world of limitations and budgets.
True. Well, I know it's only been a few days, but how's the response been so far? I know it's Xbox One, Play Anywhere with Windows 10, and then it's on Steam as well.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. Like I was saying earlier, it's just it's the first time I've actually ever done a Steam game, so it's been really cool to just see sort of how the community there reacts, and their whole mindset is so different than what you encounter with console gamers. And I don't mean that like their one's better than the other, but like the ones I mentioned who like broke out their hex editors and changed part of the game already. That's it takes me back to when I was working on RTS games like in the 90s, where you know the fans would go in and just do all kinds of crazy cool stuff with the game. But yeah, it seems like the user reviews are going really well on the Steam stuff has been I think a really positive response on the Xbox One Windows 10 side. I think people are just now starting to notice the Play Anywhere feature, which is cool. I installed it in Windows on my work computer, went home and continued playing where I left off.
That's so cool.
On my Xbox One in my little sort of man cave, and then I thought, oh, I haven't tried it in the Xbox One in the family room, so I went in there, and yeah, there it was, and I just did the install. It was pretty quick. It's only like 3 gigs for the game, and I picked up where I left off on the other one. So I think I played on 3 different devices, and it's the same game. It's the same save game the whole time. So
now there's no cross save with Steam, is there?
There is cloud save with Steam. So if you do play on multiple Steam on multiple PCs, yeah, you can definitely keep playing.
No, but it's not like you could play on Steam and then pick up your save file on Xbox if you bought it on both.
No. Those are two separate worlds.
Yeah, I didn't know how crazy Microsoft has been getting with the whole Play Anywhere and stuff like that.
Not quite that crazy.
we're seeing Xbox stuff hitting Steam now, which kind of surprised me. So
I think Microsoft's got 30 or 40 titles up on Steam.
Like, didn't Halo Wars just release today or this week?
Yeah, I think it did. You're right. Yeah.
So that's another one I just didn't expect to happen. So
you got all the classic like Age of Empires games up there, and they have a bunch of stuff up there.
And now Voodoo Vince is on there.
And now Voodoo Vince, yeah. Although it's technically from Beep.
Yeah.
We self-published, although we, on console and Windows 10, it was all through the ID at Xbox program, which was really great. It's such a cool avenue for independent games to come out on console.
Now, I know that you guys self-published it this time around. Is this an IP that you guys own, or is it a Microsoft IP?
It's still Microsoft's. That's why you'll see their copyright on the stuff. It was the sort of thing as part of my setup. I would love to have the IP, but to me, it was enough to be able to bring Vince back. It's their property. It's the thing that I created it, but that's the kind of the way business works.
Yeah. Good. I didn't want to see Vince go over to PlayStation. Oh. Fuck those guys. Oh, no. I tolerate PlayStation, I guess.
Yeah.
I have a bad history with the PS4, so.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Still have it, still play it, but we're not on the friendliest of terms. We had a bad breakup, but we still have to be friends for the kids, and by kids I mean games, so we have to coexist. I still need to see my babies, Horizon and Bloodborne and stuff like that. I just don't have to like the mother. Carnage was mentioning, because you talked about previous games you worked on. I didn't realize this until Carnage just said it, but you were involved with Deathspank.
Yes, I was.
I fucking love Deathspank.
Nice.
I never played the third one, and I don't know why, but the first two I completed. I absolutely love those two games. I still don't know why I haven't played the third.
I don't know. I don't know either.
answers?
I mean, the Deathspank is kind of an odd story. I mean, I created it with Ron Gilbert, and Ron and I have made actually a bunch of little independent games and some mobile games together. I think we've made 8 or 9 games together over the years.
Oh, wow.
And we were pitching Deathspank, I think, for 4 or 5 years, maybe. And it was, again, hard to find a home for something that's, a little offbeat and a little strange and a little quirky and funny. And he did end up making it with Hothead. I at that point, had gone to work, started my job here at Microsoft. So it was sort of a thing where I went up. I did a bunch of the character designs for the characters in the game and went up to Hothead a few times while they were in production, for a couple of brainstorm meetings and things like that. Yeah, that was I could say that I helped with the creation. I think I'm co-credited as a co-creator, of Deathspank. But the first two, I think, are the only ones that are the initial story that Ron and I wrote. So the third one, I don't believe had any of the any of the stuff that we had originally, conceived of for the character. Although it looks good, looks perfectly cool. I mean, the guys at Hothead did a really beautiful job on the game.
Yeah, I remember hearing the third one was just a different group of people behind it. So I wasn't sure what the whole story was with that.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know either. On that, I was only really involved in and the first one was I think went back and forth on whether it was going to be episodic or it was going to be a single standalone disc based game. So I think that what happened was because it was really one story, but it was released in two parts. So that was that's really one and two. That's just the initial story that Ron and I came up with.
And what is your fascination with thongs?
They're funny. It's a funny word. You could also add it to other things like thongtastic, and that's also just kind of funny. And I don't know. As you can tell from Vince, I have a juvenile sense of humor. So
that's the best sense of humor. Growing up sucks.
It does.
Just stay young forever.
I don't recommend it.
That's why I'm 36 years old and I do a podcast with dick jokes in it. Just how it is. You got to stay young at heart. Oh, man. So what else have you been up to in the time from Voodoo Vince releasing to this re-release? What the hell have you been doing in the meantime?
Oh, wow. Well, see, 13 years of living life. I like to say I went on a retreat and found enlightenment and improved myself in countless ways, but no, I kept making games. So I actually kept running, I kept doing Beep for another 4 years, and we were doing like sort of like download games, puzzle games, you know, for PC for a while there, and then went to work in 2007, back to work actually with my friend Chris Taylor at Gas Powered Games at the time, because he and I had worked on Total Annihilation way back when on the PC. So worked with him for a couple years there, right around the time that Supreme Commander was released. I was working on, I think, another character platformer there that never got released, that THQ was publishing at the time.
I remember them.
Yeah, how about that? And yes, we all know what happened there. So, and then went to Microsoft in 2009, and so I've been a design director and creative director there for the last 8 years. It's 8 years this month, so it's crazy.
Damn, that is a lot of time at Microsoft.
It is. It is. It's been a lot of stuff. I mean, I worked on a bunch of some XBLA games for a while, and it's just a thing where, you know, I work with first party publishing. So, you know, I talk with people at studios about their game designs and try to, you know, just give feedback and try to help where I can. And so that, you know, went through a mix of that, worked on some Kinect titles for a while, and then moved on to actually I was on HoloLens for almost 3 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
Just, you know, working on sort of concepts and game content and things like that there, which was really, really interesting. And then kind of back in regular console publishing for the last 2 years.
Does it, like, how do you feel about how Microsoft has treated the Kinect in recent years?
Wow. Well, it's I don't know if I can say.
Because I'm a Kinect fan. Like, I love my Kinect. I'm mad that with the Xbox One S, they removed the Kinect port and I had to get a friggin' $40 adapter.
Oh.
And even with the Scorpio coming out, there's no Kinect port on it, and I'm going to need that adapter once again. And it seems like just all the voice functionality is slowly going away. The motion controls have all gone away. The games have basically dried up except for a virtual air guitar company. Mm-hmm. And I miss the Kinect a bit.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I worked on that Pixar, Rush game, you know, it's a kind of a, for kids and family, you know, where you, play out different adventures from Pixar films, you know? And I know it sounds kind of maybe different from Death Spank and other things, although I really, really enjoyed it. And I guess I'll say that creatively, I really, really found that interesting. I mean, especially when you've been working in games for 20 odd years, like I have, it, you know, when something new comes along and you get to try new things and experiment, that is awesome. And so I really loved working on those titles, and I learned a whole lot about, just aspects of game design that never occurred to me before. So, I mean, so I'll agree with you that I was a fan of what was being done. And I think the ambition of it was also tremendous. You know, I can't really get into, I mean, I can't say I know anything like that would be really helpful to like explain the fate of that or how things trended or turned out. Yeah. I know you're not alone in that, you know, and I think there are obviously people here.
There's dozens of us.
yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's funny. I was trying to think if there's any way I could like round that up in a way that was inspiring and encouraging. But you know, it's like, I mean, I think we'll just have to see how things obviously, you know, play out here, you know, as the new generations of things start rolling out. But
Do you think the Kinect might have a second life with the Scorpio in terms of like VR or HoloLens or anything like that?
Well, I really don't know on that. Yeah, that's probably getting into areas where my day job is probably no comment. Sorry.
Because I would have to imagine that the Kinect would work really well with VR. We have a PlayStation VR, and my biggest gripe with it is the camera, because the PlayStation Eye, it's just a shitty $60 webcam, and it doesn't really do well with tracking or positioning, and it seems like the Kinect has the technology in it to have full room tracking with just one device.
Yeah, I think that's always, that was always the ambition of being able to do something and to not have to hold up, other pieces of hardware. I guess one thing I do feel is no matter what happens with a given type of hardware or generation of hardware, the ideas and if ground gets broken and ideas get out there, they don't go away. I mean, it's going to be a question of maybe what it becomes in the future, or if someone finds just the right vehicle, the right twist for something that always re-energizes things, I think. So, I don't know, who or what that would be, but I'm hopeful because I really love that stuff too.
And are you still working with the HoloLens stuff? Like, what's going on with HoloLens? We haven't heard from that in a while.
The last 2 years, I've been back over in first party publishing, just on console games and things like that. So, just been over working on games that have buttons again.
Now, I know clearly you can't like talk about anything going on with Microsoft, but I know a lot of people are getting worried about like lack of exclusives and people who are saying like every year it's just Forza, Gears, Halo, Forza, Gears, Halo, Forza, Gears, Halo. Are we going to get back to like those earlier days of the original Xbox that we talked about earlier, where you'd see stuff like Sudeki or Jade Empire or Mad Dash Racing, Bloodway, Crimson Skies, just different things?
That would be great. I don't know, Joe. Are we?
I mean, we're kind of getting there with the remasters. We have Voodoo Vince just came out. Phantom Dust is apparently around the corner before E3, allegedly.
Yeah, I've heard there's something going on with something like that.
Is Blinks next? Are we going to get the Blinks remaster?
I kind of like Blinks.
So do I. I would love to get both the Blinks. It was two Blinks games, right? It was the one in the sequel. Get them, double them up, remaster them, shove them out.
I tell you what, you get some goggles on your cats. And I think we do a really cool viral video around that, where they are not maybe shredding your face, or maybe they are. And then I think we can maybe, get some kind of, momentum going around that idea. That'd be great.
Nice. Then again, if I'm going to pick one game from like the early Xbox days to bring back, it would be Sudeki, because I friggin' love that game, and no one even remembers what the hell it was.
Yeah, that's that puzzle game with the numbers, right?
Oh yeah, clearly. Everyone's like, what game from the original Xbox would you want to see brought back? People are like, I want to see Otagi, Panzer Dragoon. I'm like, I want Sudeki back. I want more RPGs on Xbox One.
Oh yeah.
I think the world wants more RPGs on Xbox One at this point. So what are you playing in your spare time? What do you enjoy playing?
I've had practically no spare time, Joe. I've been working on this Voodoo Vince thing in evenings, weekends, for almost a year. But I do occasionally take a break. And yeah, I actually was playing some ukulele digging that. I think there's some just beautiful, beautiful things in the game. And it is I'm a huge fan of the old Rare games. And the Banjo-Kazooie franchise. So I've really enjoyed, actually, what I've seen so far. I haven't got far enough into it. I really need to get further into that game. Kind of a mixed bag of stuff, that I look at whenever I can when I get home. And then, I get to come to work and work on games. So, I'm not feeling a lack of games, but I'd like more free time to catch up on my my stack of shame, though, because, I get the stuff I've bought and the stuff I need to play and that I've downloaded, and then I realize, oh, I haven't looked at that. So yeah.
All right. Imagine you have a weekend with no obligations, nothing to do. What are you playing in that weekend?
And Breath of the Wild. I've barely scratched the surface of that, and I'm dying to get back to it. So I mean, yes. So I'll play some Zelda. I'll definitely keep playing some ukulele. And I think I have a couple other games from some other platforms stacked up as well. So I'll have to just dig in there and see what like strikes my fancy and play that.
Man, the Switch is really awesome. I'm shocked at how much I am enjoying the Switch.
I like it. I like the simplicity of it. I think there's some really compelling things there. And the whole idea of the dock and being able to go mobile with it, I think is also really cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Now I'm not sure if this is anything that you're able to discuss or even the possibility of it, but we already see Minecraft coming to the Switch. Is mm-hmm. there any way that you think Microsoft would be okay with Voodoo Vint showing up on the Switch?
Oh, I haven't brought it up. I could ask. I kind of doubt it.
Because when Rare Replay came out and people are like, oh, why isn't this, this would be perfect on the Wii U. And Microsoft was like, if Rare wants to do it, what the hell ever. Mm-hmm. Do you think Microsoft is kind of letting... embracing Nintendo a little bit, because we've seen stuff on the DS in the past. Clearly we have Minecraft over there with Nintendo properties in it. I think that'd be a pretty cool marriage for Nintendo and Microsoft to get together.
I don't know. I'm not aware of anything like that. I mean, I think it's a different situation, obviously, with a game like Minecraft, which is... as that goes, I mean, it's on everything. It's on PlayStation as well. So, yeah. I mean, it's just the game itself is just so huge that I'd say it almost transcends, those kinds of barriers. Whereas, something like Vince, I mean, I could see where it would be maybe a tougher case to make. And it's partly because it's, just a smaller, quirkier game for one thing. And yeah, I think it just kind of occupies a very different space from something like a Minecraft, which is almost like, having air and light and things like that. It's like a basic service.
Yeah.
It's like, tell the kid they can't have Minecraft on their console. That would be a very sad day.
Oh, God.
Voodoo events, I'm sure most of them could live without.
True, yeah.
I'm not trying to be modest.
Just do a trade where they could get Voodoo Vince and we get like Mario Kart or something.
Right.
That's fair. Clearly. When Voodoo Vince was announced as getting a remaster, I honestly thought that it was going to be somewhere around like a $30 price range. What made you guys stick with just a $15 price?
I don't know. I feel like the scope of the game, I feel like it's... it is a 13-year-old game in any number of respects. But I also wanted it to be something like if someone maybe wasn't aware of it or maybe they hadn't had a chance to play it, that it would be a little more tempting to just say, yeah, I'll give that a try. It just seemed like kind of the right general, neighborhood for a game like Vince.
I was honestly shocked when I saw it was a $15 game. I was like, wow, really? That's it? So I think that's really awesome that it came out at that price. I think a lot of people who might have been on the fence earlier are going to see that $15 price tag and be like, I'm gonna give it a shot.
Yeah, but that was the hope. So yeah, I'm glad you saw it that way. I think some very smart people I know who are really good at business stuff were probably thinking I should have maybe asked a higher price, but I think I like where it is. So I just kind of went with my instinct on that one.
Yeah, and then you have the Play Anywhere as well, so you're getting two copies of it basically for $15.
Right. Thanks to Play Anywhere.
So the game is just $7.50 when you think about it. You just have to buy two of them.
Yeah, you're required to buy. Yeah, I don't know if it's prorated per platform.
I don't want the Windows 10 version. Okay, well, it's still $15.
It ain't a la carte.
Oh, man. Do you honestly think if the sales do well that we could see a Voodoo Vince 2?
I mean, anything's possible.
Is that something that you would want to do? Would you like to create a whole new game?
I would love to make a whole new Voodoo Vince. Yeah, that would be awesome. It's a lot of things that have to happen for the stars to align and for that to happen. But no, I've done concept documents and kind of treatments on what I would do and where I would take Vince. And I would love to apply the last 13 years of game design experience since then to Vince. So that would actually be that would be awesome. I hope it's possible. I would love to do it. I'm still not holding my breath.
I know people noticed the Easter egg that you have in the game, mentioning Phil Spencer in the sequel.
You know, he always had a tombstone there since 13 years.
Really?
Yeah. No, I added the text this time. I should have signed the blankety blank sequel. He's always been in the he was like a studio manager, I think, in the credits on the original Voodoo Vince. So
wow.
Yeah, so we put a bunch of people, a lot of Microsoft people, coincidentally, in the graveyard in Voodoo Vince. So if you run around, you'll see our cast lead, Mike Jones, and you'll see some of the other folks who worked on it. I added a couple more people, I think this time around. One of the biz guys who helped me get this whole arrangement set up, Mike Schaubel, has got a gravestone. Shannon Loftus has a gravestone now, so, you know, it's what I do for people I like. I put them in our cemetery.
You murder your friends.
You know, as one does.
That's got to be cool to be playing a game. And, like, do you let them know ahead of time, or do you just, like, sneak them in and let them find it on their own?
You know, I actually showed them what I was doing, and I let them write their own epitaphs.
Oh, nice.
Although with Phil's, I suggested the one that is on there, and he said it was okay. So I wrote that one, but that was with Phil's blessing. Because I do work here.
True.
I don't want it to get awkward in the coffee line tomorrow morning. So,
so Clayton, about that tombstone.
Yeah. You'll notice your key card isn't working anymore today.
HR is going to be paying you a visit later on today. Oh man, that's just funny. Did you hide any other goofy Easter eggs in the game this time around, or is it for the most part still the same thing?
You know what's weird is we didn't hide more stuff, but there's a lot of stuff you can see and read now that was not legible in 480p. So like, let me think. Like when you go to the museum, you're fighting the dinosaur boss. Like if you go over to the little hat that Vince wears, there's a little plaque that says Killius Bossius or something like that. It's like just a dumb hint, like, oh yeah, this helps kill the boss. But like, you, no way you could read that in 480p. There's little signs and ads and everything. You'll see them all over, especially the French Quarter areas for like various products. Like, you know, almost all of those are named after team members. I've noticed people can now discern the face of the guy on the face on the milk carton in the Voodoo shop when you're going to the options menu, and that's that was our lead concept artist Doug Williams, who did a lot of the whole look and feel of a lot of the art in the game is definitely from Doug's very unique sense of humor and style.
That's really cool.
but you can see it now, and it's funny because yeah, we didn't touch a lot of those things, but you can just read them. It's unrelenting clarity now.
It's crazy what improved resolution can do for a game.
Yeah, definitely.
Was there anything that had to be changed with the improved resolution? Was there anything that just looked horrible when it was easier to tell what it was?
Interesting. I mean, I definitely would spend more time now if I were, spending more time on the game. I would probably keep working on more of the textures. I like the areas where I was able to do more texture work. I just thought they looked a little better, going a little more high frequency. But I also was careful because I wanted to preserve the look of the game. I think I've mentioned before, but a bunch of us went to New Orleans and with a very early generation digital cameras. And a lot of the textures you see in the game are right from the cemeteries in New Orleans. They're from the bayous. They're from, the just old houses and stuff like that we visited while we were there. And I didn't want all of that personality and all that atmosphere to go away by just replacing everything with, super, high-res versions of everything. So I tried to have a careful hand in how I did that and what I did to it. But I was going to say probably the UI is the thing that I had to replace the most. You know, like all the little panels and the text and the other things like that. None of that looked any good, of course. Yeah, that'll have to get redone.
Ah. Were there any gameplay changes that you were thinking of implementing?
Oh, gosh.
I'm curious if it ever crossed your mind to, like, eliminate the live system in the game. Because so many games have seemed to just do away with lives.
Get rid of lives, and then you just fall and come back. And it's interesting. I guess I like that there's a little tension sometimes if you're running out of lives or you're low on lives. I know it gets kind of grindy when you know, especially when you're hitting the later parts of Voodoo Vince. So it's that's an interesting question, actually. But I guess I decided to kind of stick with the wiring, you know, that was in the original game. And it's definitely kind of old school that way. But
yeah.
I mean, I think it was also kind of a slippery slope. It was like, well, if I do that, then I can do this. Oh, if I do that, then I can maybe make some more attacks for the monsters. And I would love to do all those things, but I don't think I would have ever finished the remaster. And certainly with a small team, we would have been at it for 2 or 3 more years. And then my kid wouldn't be able to go to college someday. So,
so I'm curious to know, because I've had some close calls, but it hasn't happened to me yet. What happens when you run out of lives? Because I don't want to test it on my own.
Well, two things. First, you get kicked back to the voodoo shop, and then you will continue where you that level that you died in at the beginning, and you start with 3 lives. So you get 3 lives, and then you can always, this is the thing I think some people don't realize, is you can hop on a trolley and you can warp to earlier levels, and the lives always respawn. So I usually go between the square and Main Street. That you want, like, one has 4 lives, one has 3, and they always respawn when you re-enter the level. So I would just go back and forth on the trolley between those two, and you can stockpile up to 99 lives. So
I didn't know they respawned.
Huh. They do every time you walk into a level. So if you walk through an entry point and then walk back out again, all the lives are back. So it's a sort of, it was intentional. It's kind of like maybe a lot of legwork, but you can easily kind of get a nice reserve of lives going if you need to before you get into the hellish platforming of the carnival.
Oh man, there's some tough stuff in this game.
I'm so sorry.
was there anything that, like, looking back, you're thinking maybe I should have toned it down a bit?
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, I think where the game, there's some areas that get kind of repetitive. I mean, I know there's a lot of serial swing hooks going on in the carnival, and that is not everyone's favorite part of the game. Maybe more save points or warps, so you can go back and, you know, maybe do the final boss in a little more piecemeal, because right now I think you can leave from the very first stage. You can't from the later ones. Except for the very inside of the inside the Cosmobot when you're trying to get to Cosmo's brain. Everything else, I was like, man, you have to go in one long kind of marathon session. So definitely, respawn points would definitely be something I'd look at a little differently, and probably try to make a little less brutal. They're brutal.
I'm just so happy knowing that the extra lives respawn.
Oh yeah. So trolley stop in the square. You can make one quick run along the rooftops and around the back by the burlesque and all that stuff and get like 3 lives really quickly. And then you can either do the exit to Main Street or just hop back on the trolley, go to Main Street, and then there's like 3 within like 20 seconds of that trolley stop. And then, yeah, you can just pile them up, man. Go nuts.
That gives me so much relief, because I've had close calls and I have gone back to earlier levels and I saw extra lives there. I'm like, oh, I must not have gotten this one before, not thinking that they respawned. I just hovering like around 3 or 4 lives, and then I'll get to a boss and I'll lose 2 of them. Like, shit.
Now you can walk in with a huge life buffer.
What's going to happen if this son of a bitch knocks me off the stage one more time? Listen, dinosaur with your friggin' tail.
Hey, at least the tail has a shadow now, which we did not have 13 years ago. So you can see where it's about to kill you.
So you know precisely where you're going to die.
Well, that's where it killed me, right there.
I like Carnage saying in chat, just add a 99 lives for 99 cent microtransaction.
Yeah, if we were doing the game today, it would be free to play. We would charge by the life.
Oh, man. You've done mobile stuff, right? Has your mobile stuff been free to play, or has it been like pay a price and get a game?
I think I did two games that were paid. One was iPad and one was on phone. And one of them kind of when we released it on Android, we went free to play on just to sort of see what that was all about, and did not go well. it was interesting. I mean, we learned a lot about that market and how that works and the psychology of it. That was Scurvy Scallywags. It's the kind of a matching adventure story game that Ron and I did. It's very odd, but I really enjoyed it. It was a really fun project. That one free to play mixed in the mix there.
Are we going to see Scurvy Scallywags HD?
Well, it is. It's on iPad, so I mean that's pretty.
Bring it to Xbox One.
Oh man, I don't know. Puzzle Quest is actually pretty good on XBLA, come to think of it. But I usually don't like doing like matching and swapping games with a game controller. I don't know.
I love, like, Gems of War is one of, is, I think, one of the...
I was just thinking that, and I was also remembering the old Puzzle Quest stuff. I was like, yeah, that was... Okay, those can be all right. Those can be pretty good.
And I think Gems of War is one of the few free-to-play games that does it. Like, you don't have to spend a penny in Gems of War unless you want to.
Sure.
And I think they nailed it with the free-to-play.
They did, yeah. Actually, that's all very true. And I think there's ways to do free to play that is like that, where it's like, hey, if you want to do it, it's kind of optional, versus the I'm going to just throw you into a situation that is unwinnable until you reach into your wallet. And that is crap. I really hate it when games do that.
And that is Frozen Freefall.
That's most free to play games.
It's like such night and day between Frozen Freefall on Xbox One and Gems of War on Xbox One. One is like the right way to do free to play. The other is the wrong way. And they're both free to play match three puzzle games.
Yep.
So yeah, Scurvy Scallywags HD.
All right. Okay. I'll put that on the list.
You'll put that on the list right after Voodoo Vince DLC, Voodoo Vince 2, Sudeki HD.
and what, Death Spank 5 or whatever.
I would love to see a new Death Spank.
Oh, I would love to revisit her, that big lovable lug.
do you think that's something that you'd be able to do? Like, who owns the Death Spank IP? Is that something that you and Ron Gilbert are able to do?
No, I think that is owned by Hothead right now. I think Hothead owns that, so I don't know.
And what the hell are they doing? Like, let's get new Death Spank.
I think they moved on to like free to play games.
Damn it!
Small world. I'm pretty sure they were doing something like that, like subscription games or something.
Hothead, they had just a couple of years where everything they made was just gold. The original Death Spank games, the Penny Arcade, the first two there. Mm-hmm. I thought those were some of the most fun games out there. They were beautiful. I love the hand-drawn visuals. They mm-hmm. were fun. They were funny. And then, I don't know, just kind of went away.
It's a tough space. But, maybe in 13 years...
Sorry. Death Spank HD, the full HD trilogy. Oh man, from HD on 360 to HD on the Xbox One.
Yeah, you just gotta get more HD out there.
Just add a couple more H's to it.
Our first game was just D. Now it's HD.
One of the comments, I'm not even going to try that name. Holy shit. Would love some Voodoo Vince merchandise. Is that something we could see happen?
Oh, I could say sort of, because there is a, like a Redbubble store where there's t-shirts and mugs and crap like that. So you can look up the Beep Games Redbubble shop, but I know this is meaningless. I know none of you care about that, because I know what everybody wants. Is a Voodoo Vince doll.
Yes. I was just going to say a Voodoo Vince plushie.
And I will say that I had very preliminary talks with people who do such things. And yeah, the lead times for dolls is like 6 months, and the upfront cost can be pretty high, depending on how you do it. and I would also love one. And we, you know, we only made that tiny, tiny run back when the original game came out. I'm sure some of you have seen these dolls. And
there are dolls out there.
There are, but here's the weird deal with those. They made them for press. They were like a promotional giveaway. Ugh. And then the team members all got, we each got two. And I gave one to my son when he was three, and he, like, you know, chewed it to pieces. That's all right. I think it's still in pretty good shape. I still have mine. And occasionally they turn up on eBay, and you could buy them usually for $200 or $300.
Oh no, there's two on there right now.
There's one or two out there, and there's like somebody who keeps posting one for like $1,600. So it's, you know, I admire their ambition, but I there's no way it's worth $1,600. But it's not a great, it's an okay doll. It's not a great doll. It looks all right. You know, it's about the right scale too, which is really cool. But I don't know. So yeah, I'd love there to be proper, like really good quality that really look like Voodoo Vents dolls at some point though. So you know, right now none are in the works. It's the sort of thing where usually you have to, these days you license it to someone who would then manufacture them, and then, you know, they handle all that. It's again a tough case with kind of a quirky little thing like Vince. So I don't know. I'll keep at it. I'll keep bugging people. That seems to work.
I actually threw the one eBay auction on the stream right now.
Did you? The one that's like where they want $1,600?
No, there's a second one at $1,100.
Okay. You know, this remaster might have. That's a bargain then. Yeah,
with like the plastic jug and a copy of the game.
The jug is a really nice touch. And all yours for the low, low price of $1,100.
The description says only 100 made. Is that about accurate?
I'd say probably 200 or 300 is more likely, because then they went out to a bunch of press. And there were some people who there was one like software store in Germany that just had it stapled to the wall or something that somebody sent me a picture of years later. So I mean, yeah, it's a no overseas shipping.
Oh my lord!
So I mean, I'd say 100 is a ballpark. I'd say given that the team was 20, we each got two. That's 40. Yeah, there's definitely a couple hundred at least. But yeah.
Good. Well, you said there's dolls. I'm like, oh man,
let me. This person a filthy liar, but you know,
but they're a filthy liar. You mentioned there's dolls. I'm like, oh, let me jump on eBay, see if there's anything like, I don't know, $30-$40.
Well, occasionally one does come up, and they usually do go for seriously, like, you know, a couple $100 is not unusual. I lost a bit because I thought I would be a jerk and buy them all up at one point, but I lost a bit recently to someone for like $240, $250.
Jesus.
I know, it's pretty silly.
The craziest thing is the one at $1,100 has a bid on it.
Really?
So it's going to sell for over $1,000. So if you want to fund a sequel,
just start making more rare, hard to get dolls.
Just hit up all the other team members from the original game and be like, hey, listen, I want to get a sequel going, but we have to sell our dolls on eBay.
The good news is we only need to sell about 100 dolls.
So you have to sell all the dolls.
The bad news is
clearly there are idiots out there who are willing to pay $1,000 for a Voodoo Vince doll.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't complain. I mean, they love the character. It's like, you know, I don't know if you've seen on, I think I have it on the Vince page on Facebook. There's people who have some really amazing Voodoo Vince tattoos. I mean, amazing, amazing. I don't want a Voodoo Vince tattoo. No, seriously. I mean, okay, here's the reason. I love Vince, but walking around with a tattoo of a character you created on you is just kind of, I don't know. I think that would come across the wrong way for some reason.
Kind of egotistical, douchey.
Yeah, something like, here's my portfolio on my skin.
Turn into Peter Moore and just get different tattoos over here.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Yeah.
Were you at Xbox when that happened, or were you at Microsoft when the Peter Moore Halo 2 tattoo happened?
No, I was still out there in the world doing my own thing then. So,
because has that ever been confirmed if that was real?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I know he did one like the following year that was clearly marker, but that Halo one looked real. And I could probably Google it. What was it, like Grand Theft Auto? Was it Grand Theft Auto, the one that he had like the marker tattoo on? But that the Halo one looked kind of real, so I'm not sure.
I don't know. I should also circle back and say, by the way, the people who have the Vudovins tattoos are awesome, and they look they look awesome. They really do. I'm just a stodgy old man who is just not. I don't know any drawings I like well enough to have drawn on me. So
this was your chance to just shit all over them and their dreams.
No, I felt like really bad because I wasn't trying to get that across.
What is wrong with you?
It is amazing. I'm amazed that anything I created is like that much. That's actually really cool.
Is that like a nice ego stroker?
Yeah. Usually when I need a discount on like my Americano at the coffee stand, I'll say, you know, my work is featured prominently in several tattoos. And people just give me giant discounts on now. I'm not sure where I was going with that bit. Sorry.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah, you know, my work is on tattoos. I don't know.
Oh, man. That's got to be crazy, though, to see something you created permanently on someone else's body.
It is amazing, actually. It really is. I'm flabbergasted would be, I guess, the right word. I'm flabbergasted.
So, if you know anyone out there who has a Vudovins tattoo and they still haven't bought the sequel, or not the sequel, the remaster, sorry, I just want a sequel, they haven't bought the remaster, what would you say to them?
Oh, that's interesting. I think they might need to get a second tattoo that is high definition. No, I don't know. It's like a... you know, it's weird. Actually, that's an interesting question, because I think what I would say is I don't think I have anything beyond if they want the remaster, they should get the remaster. But
you know, the remaster is cheaper than that tattoo was, right?
Probably. But no, I'm saying sometimes it is all right if people want to leave things, you know, as this is just a memory in the past. You know, I mean, it's like. I have been really, really amazed at how people have responded to the remaster, and I get a lot of really positive feedback from everybody. The social stuff has been like, wow, there's people who are tearful and sentimental because they grew up with it, and that is really cool. But I also remember occasionally, like when like watching a TV show I watched when I was like a kid, thinking, oh, that's going to be great to see this again, and not always.
Rose-tinted glasses, they were off after a while.
Exactly, yeah, but I'm trying to be philosophical about it, so if someone doesn't want to, you know, just wants it to be a fond memory, that's cool, that's fine.
Like, what was wrong with me? Why did I ever think this was good?
I realize I'm doing the worst possible marketing for my own game right now. this is why I don't work in PR and marketing.
Oh, God. Me neither. I think I'm
Which shows? Which shows? Oh, that's pretty easy. If you look at old like Sid and Marty Krofft, like HR Puffin stuff.
Oh God.
Yeah, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Like I'd be like 7 or 8 or whatever, however old I was, and I'd think, wow, this is the best. And then like, no, you watch it now, you go, wow, those guys were high.
What a great thing to mention on April 20th.
Oh, yeah. Well, see? We're thematically appropriate. I'm also in Washington State, you know, so I guess I could just, you know, go up the road here and, you know.
So, how does it work in those states? Like, do jobs still drug test for that out there?
Some would. And so, yeah, I think some jobs do. It's also complicated if where you work at a place that is like the federal government, because that's still kind of a legal gray area.
Yeah.
Not that I know a whole lot about this. I'm just saying. I know a guy or heard about a guy. Yeah.
There is a Vudovins tattoo owner in the chat.
Oh, is there really?
It's the name that I'm not even going to try.
Do you, really? So let's see. Hungry Hannibal? Is that what that is? Is that Hungry Hannibal?
I think so. Oh my God. I just
you have a, do you really have a Voodoo Bitch tattoo?
Hun
really?
Six Rai Hania Eight.
Yeah, I'll just do it phonetically.
I'm too old. I numbers, they're weird.
Oh no, Carnage! Careful what you ask for.
Carnage demanding pictures.
You don't know where this Voodoo Vince is.
Oh God. Well, it's on my ass.
Yeah, we can hope.
Take a picture and tweet it. If you could get us a picture, I will use it as the image for this episode on our YouTube post.
Nice.
Because that would be neat to have.
Thank you for the comment on the remaster, by the way. That was really nice.
Yeah, it seems like everyone I've been talking to so far is really digging the remaster.
Yeah, I'm also again flabbergasted. No, I'm actually really, really happy about that. I just wanted to say flabbergasted a lot.
Are you enjoying getting to play the game on something that's not like a glass tube TV?
Yes. Oh yeah,
TV that could crush your pet.
Oh yeah, I think what I thought was the most amazing TV ever. It was 35 inches.
35. I thought my 32 was big.
And it was a Samsung or Toshiba. It might have been a Toshiba, but it was also, man, that thing weighed a billion pounds. I think I killed a couple of friends just trying to move it once or twice. So yeah,
I remember my first flat screen TV was like one of those 50-inch or like 55-inch.
55
like the floor model thing that's like on wheels, and you have to have three people lifting it up, one on each side with the handles built into the side. rear projection TV.
Yeah, those, because you walked into someone's house and you always think, wow, what a huge, that's amazing. And then, you know, they would turn it on and it looked like a kind of like a snow globe. Or they were kind of hazy looking.
For the longest time, I had a 27-inch glass tube TV, and I thought it was the greatest thing. And then my friend was selling a 32-inch. I'm like, it doesn't get any better than this. Now I have a 65-inch. I'm like, this thing is so fucking small. It's worthless.
Yeah. Pretty soon, it'll just be wallpaper. Just pin it up on the wall. Done.
That's got to be interesting, though, to go from 480 glass tube TV curved. Mm-hmm. I don't think people understand what these old TVs used to be like.
Because
you just know your computer monitors.
And you know, anyone who is familiar with game development or played games then knows that there's TV safe. So you had to make sure all of your UI and all of your elements and all your stuff was, you know, way, way, way off to the side. You know, like, I'm not sorry, off to the side, but like closer to the middle of the screen to leave all that room. And then what was there? And then colors were different, really, really different. You know, like red always blew out like big time. You know, like you had to be really. I mean, the reds you would use in a game back then were practically like a rusty brown color. You know, really, seriously, that came across as red because CRTs would just, you know, distort it so badly. But yeah, that was one nice thing, was being able to kind of return like a kind of like, it's a truer portrayal of like the light map colors that lay all over the levels and vents, which I realize are mostly purple, but those come across, I think, a lot more vibrant and pleasant looking now.
I remember, what the hell was it? I want to say WWE Monday Night Raw, because they have a red logo. Watching that on like an old TV with just how red it was, it would just get like all staticky and distorted. Red was weird.
It really was. And getting even more nerdy on game development, when I worked on Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis games,
ooh,
you had to treat red differently on those two platforms, because on the Genesis, red pixels would bleed like 30% to the left of them. But if you were smart, you could use that to blend colors and make them look cooler and smoother. But yeah, it was weird having to know all those weird little tricks.
Skittlepup is asking, did you post a Cosmo doll at one point?
That is a Cosmo doll keychain made by a Voodoo Vince fan, actually, who is over on the Voodoo Vince Facebook page, and I think on Twitter as Voodoo Chicory is the name. And so she does these She's done a number of really, really cool, like Voodoo Vince inspired dolls and creations and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Man, we're just finding out all the things that are going to be in the Voodoo Vince Collector's Edition when it comes out.
Pretty much. And I'm sure she'll sell you a Cosmo head for $1,100. I'm kidding.
I mean, we see companies out there like IndieBox and Limited Run Games doing limited collector's editions of games.
Yeah.
Is that something you would like to do? I know for some reason, like, they don't do anything with Xbox, I think because of, like, the requirements of how many copies are printed or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. I mean, when you're third party, you kind of pay up front for a lot of that kind of stuff. And, you know, you have to have a certain amount per unit. You have a certain minimum order. So it makes it more challenging for, like, a smaller studio to do physical media, which is, again, why I did the ID program and went all digital with this one. You know, I get asked about physical media a lot for events, and I would like to. Someday, we'll see. And if there's a way to do, like, a limited or run or something, that would be cool. But yeah, right now, no plans that I can, you know, speak of.
So you just hit up the guys at Limited Run Games, do the game with, like, a soundtrack disc, a mini art book, a Vince plushie, and a Cosmo keychain. It's just,
oh man,
falling into place here.
it really is coming together now.
And yeah. And then, to top it all off, you only charge $800.
That's right.
Beat the competition.
Ask the savings onto you, the consumer.
Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for a little over an hour now. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? I feel bad taking up your whole night.
No, it's okay. You know, I mean, food is for the weak. No, it's good. I'm good. And I'm happy to answer questions, but I think I don't have much to say.
I think the chat kind of went through all the questions they had, if we're just talking about tattoos now. But it has been absolutely fantastic having you on the show. I want to thank you for making the time to come on, and also I guess fulfilling my goal of having someone from Microsoft come on my show. I know it's not officially as Microsoft, but hey, it's that roundabout way I made it happen.
Stealth appearance, yes.
I mean, and anyone could tell you, if they've listened to our show for 1 week or since episode one, we have always been Xbox fans on the show, and I am so happy to have someone on who's working with Xbox and has had a game on the original Xbox and is out now on the Xbox One, and I like Xbox, so I'm a nerd. What are you going to do?
I can't complain about that. I like Xbox, too.
You made my goal happen. Accidentally.
And I helped you with your goal, and I feel pretty good about that. So, yeah. it's been really fun. It's been a really, really fun talk.
Yeah, come on again sometime. Anytime. It has been an absolute pleasure getting you on. And is there anything, any final words that you want to say about your game? Final plugs or anything else?
I guess just to prove that I am not the worst at talking about my game, yes, it is Voodoo Vince Remastered. It's out on Xbox One and Windows 10 on with Xbox Play Anywhere, and is also available on Steam. So there you have it.
And for the people listening, we actually, next week, we are going to have 2 Steam codes to give away.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so that should be fun.
Can I have one?
I mean, if you want. No, I'm kidding. It's kind of cheating, but you know, if you want.
Oh, I can get a good one. All right. I know a guy.
You know a guy. I know a guy. I am a guy. So I'm the guy. So I know
me. That guy is me.
Oh, man. But again, it was fantastic having you on. Do you have any final words to end this episode of the show?
No.
is the voodoo doll. A phenomenon known to just a few, that voodoo doll. He jumped out of some wacky magic brew. And that's not all. Things are getting so strange since he came round, a hoodoo brawl. There's a mystery taking over town. He's just a little fella made of burlapping thread. He looks a little funny with those pins in his head. His cause and effect isn't really correct, but he still fills the bad guys with dread. Vince the voodoo doll, you're gonna feel full when he has lunch, a voodoo doll. You're gonna feel bad when he goes crunch against the wall. And if he should slip, you're gonna take a voodoo fall. He's a hero who's just 10 inches tall. Vince the voodoo doll.